It's time for Twit, and this week has been crazy. Apple's dropped some eye goodness on us. Google is in deep water for pay inequality. Should Facebook be the gatekeeper for democracy? And Foxconn goes all cheesehead. Coming up next on Twit.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twit, episode 632, recorded September 17, 2017. The smartest dumb people in the world.
This Week in Tech is brought to you by Texture. Access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your smartphone or tablet. Try it free for 14 days at texture.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. A good IT pro is always learning, and IT Pro TV is the resource to keep you and your IT team's skills up to date. Visit itpro.tv/twit and use the code TWIT30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by the Ring Video Doorbell. With Ring, you can see and talk to anyone at your door from anywhere in the world using your smartphone. It's like caller ID for your home. Go to ring.com/twit and get up to $150 off a Ring of Security kit. And by WordPress. Your customers want to find you, so build a WordPress.com website and help them connect with your business. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/twit.
It's time for Twit. This Week in Tech, this is the show that releases more important, vital, crucial data than Equifax. It's going to be quite the show, as this was a super busy week. From Apple's newest announcements to Google dealing with a record fine to Uber behaving badly again. We've got the perfect panel to break it all down into brain-sized chunks of data. Starting on my left with Dr. Jeff Jarvis. He is a journalist, public speaker, leading voice in online news, and a professor at the CUNY School of Journalism in New York. Jeff, this, I think, is the first time I've actually had you on a show that I've been involved
with. I'm delighted for more reasons, you know, because who was supposed to be in that chair today?
Mr. Calacanis. He became ill.
So
yes.
Basically, I went from a devil to an angel. and this makes me very happy. I'm sorry that Jason is ill. I feel bad for you, Jason, but I feel kind of good to have you here.
I think he would actually accept the phrase devil investor.
I think he would.
That would be a new one. Demon investor. I think that would fit right along with his next book, Angel Devil, right?
Yeah.
Right? There we go. We've, of course, also got Mark Million. He is Bloomberg's technology writer and editor. He is also, I would say, quite possibly the fountain of youth in the Twit TV studios right now. Mark, I have worked with you before. How have you been?
I've been great, and I appreciate it. I enjoyed your sick burn against Equifax at the intro of the show. That was real good.
Equifax is, we're going to talk about it, but it is the gift that keeps on giving. If by gift you mean black eyes and smacks across
total
the
mess.
Head. Yeah, yeah. Of course, it can't just be those folks who are in the studio. We needed to bring in someone who could really break down the knowledge into what we need. And of course, that's got to be Doctor. It's Owen J.J. Stone. J.J., I have not worked with you in years, and it is an absolute pleasure to see you again. Although I have to say, the last time I saw you, you had sort of a bookcase cat anime background going on, and now you seem very minimalist.
Well, with the Equifax leak and me being on the dark web, I mean, I got to reallocate my Social Security number and the situation I find myself in. You know, the internet is out here trying to find people, so I'm just trying to hide out.
So now you just hold up in Charlie Rose's studio over there?
Hey, look, until this whole thing blows over, I mean, admin password is out here floating around, and we got some big issues on the internet right now, so better safe than sorry, gentlemen.
We will get to that story in a bit, but I have to say I was a little sad that the password wasn't 12345. I mean, seriously, that would have been just the geek squeak.
They threw
horrible,
a six
horrible
on the
thing.
End. They threw a six on the end.
Yeah, yeah. But gentlemen, let's go ahead and dive straight in. Let's start with where I think a lot of people are starting, whether or not they're fans of Apple. Apple did make some significant announcements this week, not just in product, but also in policy and in pricing. So let's jump into what we know. We know that they released three phones. We've got the iPhone 8 and the iPhone 8 Plus. Both are nice. Many people are saying they could just as well be the 7 and the 7 Plus. They've upped the technology a little bit. It uses Apple's new A11, the Bionic processor, with 6 cores, 2 of which are low performance, 4 of which are high performance. It's got a new 12-megapixel camera with optical stabilization with Apple's signal processing. So they say they've upped their low-light performance. A new portrait mode, which I kind of like, because it's got it's basically a filter before a filter. It can actually detect what a scene is like and choose the right settings for that. And a 3,000 milliamp hour battery. So it's going to last long. It's going to be faster. It's got an all-glass back. Let's start with that, because obviously we want to get to the X. But are we impressed with the 8 Plus? Have you pre-ordered? Are you ready to buy it? JJ, is this going to be your next phone?
I'll let everybody else go first. I'm going to go last.
Okay. Okay. Wow. He's going to sit on that for a while. Mark, what do you think?
I mean, it's a decent phone. This is like comparable to any of their other, you know, step along phones that they do each year. The all glass back is a nice throwback to the 4, which I thought is probably one of the most attractive phones ever made. This is not
That's
the
impressive
phone.
That you can keep the model straight.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the one that Gizmodo leaked. That was the classic phone.
And also, it was strange because when they went away from the glass backing, it had a couple of people scratching their heads thinking, so now it looks like every other phone again. With that glass back, it was unique. And yes, it had a couple of issues that had to be sorted out.
The antenna, yeah, for sure. But also, glass is more susceptible to breaking. So when you put glass on both sides, you've got like a Fabergé egg that you're trying to carry around. So from a practical perspective, we'll see how strong this glass is. I look forward to the inevitable YouTube videos of people trying to smash it when it comes out. But it's a fine phone. This is not the phone that the people who listen to this show are interested in, I don't think. It's not the one that I would be interested in, but it's a decent phone. And the addition of wireless charging, I think they're really moving in that direction for a lot of their products. So that's going to be an interesting move for Apple.
Are they going to keep the 7 on sale at a much lower price? What are they going to have to offer?
Yeah, they did announce their pricing, and so they are dropping everything.
But are they keeping just the 7s, the 8s, and the 10?
Actually, it goes all the way. You can get down to the 6.
You can get the 6.
Mm. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, which I have to say, if I had a 6, I would not feel a great urge to upgrade. And if I had a 7 Plus, I would definitely not feel the urge to upgrade. The 8 Plus looks just like the 7 Plus. It is slightly faster, but the 7 Plus was already so fast and the screen was so wonderful that unless I really, really, really wanted wireless charging, which I don't see as a big thing. I've had wireless charging on a lot of phones, and sure, it's nice every once in a while, but the difference between putting on a platform and just plugging it into a cable, that was never a huge...
I think they're not even releasing the mat until next year, so... Yeah.
It's a standard. Why would they wait?
It's Qi charging. But
yeah.
I mean, you need to buy a
third-party mat.
Or it won't be as beautiful.
It won't be as pretty.
It won't be as sleek.
The pricing, we know, is going to be a little bit higher. For the 8, which is a 4.7-inch screen, it's 1334 by 750. You can either get the 64 or the 256-gigabyte version for $700 or $850. And then the Plus, which has the 5.5-inch screen, that's a full HD, 1920 by 1080. 64 or 256 gigabyte for $800 or $950. So, yeah. That's the lower of the phones announced. So let's go ahead and let's jump to the X. The 10. My bad. Let's jump to the 10. Oh, I'm sorry. Owen, you wanted to jump in on the 8s, right?
It sucks. It's the same thing. I mean, I am so tired of Apple's marketing. Apple has the best marketing in the world. And you say the same thing every year. Ooh. Wireless charging, cool story. My grandma was doing that back in 2012. A glass back, oh yeah, it looks sexy until you break it. Forget the YouTube videos. The average user always breaks that glass backing. When you had the metal backing, sure, you had a little bend gate or whatever crap that was, but at least it took a dent and it kept on ticking. Now when you break the glass and just cut your thumb on the back of it, because Lord knows half the people that have a regular job don't want to spend the $200 to send the phone back in to get fixed, because most people don't get to AppleCare because they buy it through their cell phone providers. So that's just one more thing to break. I don't care how gorilla super duper hooper man this glass is going to be. It's breakable glass. Why? You made the same phone, then you had the nerve to skip the 7S and just call it an 8, then you're going to come out with an X. Who is running this monkey show over there anymore? I miss Steve so much every day. It is insane. Like... Who cares about the 8? Nobody. You can dim the lights on my picture. Cool story, bro. I got Lightroom for $9.99 a month. Let's talk about this X.
Okay, but I mean, to address that, you're still on the fence, though. That's what it sounds like.
Who's on the fence? People are going to buy this phone. People are going to line up to buy this phone, yeah, to resell this phone, to make money off this phone, thinking they need this phone. They don't. People are spend $41 a month on this stupid phone and don't have life insurance. Like, I understand that people are going to buy the phone, but my goodness, Samsung and Nexus and Google and everybody and their mom who makes a phone has been doing this. I mean, the new X looks like an HTC phone from 6 years ago with that stupid loopity hoop at the top. Let's talk about it.
Okay. Let's go ahead and go to the 10, because that's actually, that loopity hoop is what everyone has been talking about.
Ugly. From the sex appeal designers of the world, you put devil horns on the top of my phone with full screen. I'm going to have to dim out the two caps when I'm watching a full screen video of myself on Twitter with the black background. This is ridiculous. Come on, let's go.
But wait, it's the new thing, and it's beautiful, and everyone's going to love it because it's a 5.8-inch screen. It's 2436 by 1125. It's OLED, edge to edge, except for the notch.
Except for the notch.
And they say they are very excited about it. And it's only $50 more than the highest of the 8. So why wouldn't you wait for 10?
Because it's only got 64 gigs of space. And again, my grandmother had more space than that back in 1942. What are you doing charging $1,000 for 64 gigs when you have a phone that's not upgradable in space capacity? Like, that's ridiculous. Like, you really just ripping people off knowing that they're going to line up and buy this stupid phone, and then the next jump is up to 256. It should have been everybody on that panel knows it should have been 128 for $1,000. Come on. Keep going.
This is true.
I'm waiting for the 9.
Yeah. Yeah,
ain't no 9. We passed that.
We're going to the 11.
XLLP now. We can't do 9
they
now.
Can
we
do gotta a start 9. Jumping they up. Could do an X1 and a 9. They can move the.
Well, they could do the X and then the Y.
I don't know if they're gonna go
the
back.
X2 or whatever.
Yeah. What do you do? 11X, XI.
Like, I think the 9 is gonna be one of those lost models, like the Xbox 720 or Windows 9.
Windows 9. Yeah.
We're just gonna pretend like that number doesn't exist. No, but let me ask you about this, because JJ makes a very good point. From the people who have been watching technology and are kind of agnostic about their handset, the announcements that Apple put out, OLED screen, wireless charging, bigger battery, those have been features that have been available on other phones from Android and Microsoft for years now, literally years, and yet it's a premium on the iPhone X. Is that right? Is it justifiable? I mean, it doesn't seem to be stopping pre-sales. People are still jumping out there. It still has a buzz. People still want to spend their money. They're lamenting the fact.
Is there going to be a line? Are we going to see people sleeping?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be limited supply for sure.
I think there'll be a line for the 8, even for the 8. And the people who are buying the 8, the only reason why they're buying the 8 is because the 10, won't come out till November.
But also to save money. I mean, some people don't. Like
it's not a lot of money.
The difference is not great.
It's several hundred dollars.
Well, I mean, the low end.
The top of the line 8 Plus is $200 less than the top of the line 10. And I mean, when you're already spending $800-$900, that's not a whole lot.
But the 7, right? The 7 sold more than the 7 Plus, so you would assume that the regular 8 that fits in most people's hands is going to be the unit that sells more as the 8 comes out too. So yes, at the top end of the 8 Plus, which isn't the max majority of users, so that price difference is a big jump for the majority of people that usually buy the iPhone.
Right.
So when was the last thing that Apple announced that excited you?
The Apple Watch, and then I got unexcited the next
Real quickly, yeah.
Okay, well, we can come back to the phones because, I mean, there are so many programs that have covered the phones. I think people understand the price breakdown, and this is Apple. I mean, people will buy it. It will still be a blockbuster product, even if there are people looking at this going, I don't understand why it's so expensive.
The face detection is significant if it works the way they say it
is. And, oh, yes.
No one's done that yet.
Let's cover that really quickly because they did come up with an excuse.
I know what Owen's going to say. I want to cut it off before he says it. Samsung had it. You hold up a Polaroid of somebody's face and it unlocks it for you. If Apple can do it where it actually maps faces, that's a big deal.
Okay, cool. So they're mapping faces. Let me just tell you a couple scenarios, okay? Now, I may or may not have had a criminal past in my life, but let's say I get into an altercation with the police. I tape it on my phone. I try to lock my phone up. I'm in the backseat of the cop car. They hold my phone up to the back window and boom, delete all the videos I took of them beating up me and my friend and throwing us in the ditch. I know they're not supposed to. I know there's laws against that, but we've seen that happen in the past. Secondly, I'm in here trying to creep on a conversation at my office and maybe play, I don't know, Words with Friends. And now, instead of me hit my thumb on the button underneath my desk, I got to look down and up at my phone to make sure that it gets my face.
You can still punch in your passcode.
Man, look, I'm talking about the easeability, the flexibility, the button ability. You have me spending $1,200 on a phone and I ain't got no fingerprint reader on the back like every other phone that charges you like $900 or more. Again, when you talk about design and aesthetics and how sexy everything is, I just don't understand why I can't still just have a fingerprint reader and I got to use my face, and there's all other kinds of reasons and problems with the face, and I don't think it's that great.
Only one face per device.
I can make emojis. Yeah, one face per device. I can make emojis and make poo move and stuff like that. Like, my daughter's the only person I know that sends me those happy birthday balloon laser light show text emojis. Like, so basically, we're hoping kids pay $1,200 on a phone and use poo face emojis and unicorn emoji face. Like, come on, man. Like, it's, again, marketing. I get it. But I don't think it's a perfected technology. And there's a lot of problems I see on the horizon with that.
Now, the demo did fail. While they were actually showing off the facial recognition, it failed. But Apple did release a statement later on saying it was actually a feature. This was not a bug. This was not a demo fail. What had happened, according to Apple, is that many people had handled the phone and it had tried to do face detection on everyone who handled it, and it had
the poor phone. Just
it had
got
aired
confused.
Out. Yeah, right. Well, exactly. It aired out so many times that it locked itself, which is a security feature. You want that?
Yeah.
You know what I dread?
You know, so when I go into the men's room now, don't worry. Okay. And where are we going with this? I try to go under the sink. I'm going like this. It thinks I'm a zombie or something. I'm not. True. I don't exist. I try to get the paper towel. It doesn't exist. I'm afraid that if I had this phone, it would just say, you're not real.
Hey, Owen, can I look at your iPhone X? Nah, dog. If too many faces look at it, it locks up. I can't really show it to you. How about we just show you the back of my phone, and you can look at the camera that's actually a Samsung camera, but that's neither here nor there. Let's not talk about licensing. But we can just look at the back of it. You'll get the gist. There's horns at the top. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on.
Actually, I do want to address one point that you did bring up, Owen, and that is unlocking the phone. So if Ellie wants to unlock the phone, right now we know that biometric data is not actually protected. So they cannot demand that you enter in your PIN. I mean, sure, they could throw you in jail until you do, but they cannot demand that you give them your password. However, your fingerprint and your face are not protected. It's not covered under the Fourth Amendment, right?
Right.
So, right. I mean, by that logic, the phone should also not have a biometric fingerprint reader. I mean, if you're really concerned about that.
If I'm dealing with somebody, at least I could go like this to protect somebody from taking my fingers when I'm getting put into a squad car and unlocking my phone. When they just go like this, you're beat and they're into your phone. So yes, I get the gist of it. Like I said,
so imagine another way: somebody steals your phone from you. They hold you up. You're still standing there because they've got a gun on you. They take their phone. They can unlock your phone and then go away. Right? Not to be paranoid.
Hey, look, I'm just, let's say, Jeff, come on, knick-knack, paddywhack, Jeff, it's little things. We got to find out what's going on. I just want a fingerprint reader. That's all.
Okay.
That's
on the back.
Buy the iPhone
8. Very nice. It's on my nice Pixel.
And since they made the button not a physical button, you could have just put the circle with a little line around it and made it flat to the back of the phone and still touch it, because your button isn't a real button anyway. You could have had some sleek, sexy design thing to say, hey, you still want to use your finger? Go ahead, use your finger, dog. We got you.
Maybe you should instead stroke the notch.
There you go.
Oh, yeah, show title.
That sounds good. I like that.
So the notch. Android watches that had the flat tire.
Right.
Irritated the heck out of
me.
Yes, it
did.
Right? It was bad design. It was just trying to solve a problem. It was the definition of a kludge. The notch is a kludge, right? It's just a kludge.
Yeah. I'm absolutely down with that. I don't see how that little bit of real estate at the top can be anything but a way to say, no, we're edge to edge. It's not useful screen, right? I mean, you can't put anything that's going to look good. It's just always going to be that notch.
I mean, is there any way to technically put a speaker and a camera and under a screen at that part of the screen? I mean, it's just a...
But, I mean, that's not where they're going to put it. They're always going to put it down fire
or side
firing.
Little, you know, Kilroy was here, bump.
That's right. I could see some great skins being put onto this thing.
Again, you just run the line across the top like the Galaxy does. And yes, I could hold a Polaroid up to my Galaxy to open up with my face. But I mean, again, all this technology is old and they wazza-wooza-wooza it and make it sound sexy and people go buy it. But at the end of the day, it's just not exciting. And for people who are in the know, like, really, what am I supposed to be excited about? We're going to talk about all the other stuff, but everything we're going to say about Apple has been done by other people and other devices for years now. Apple TV, cool story, bro. 4K just came out yesterday. Oh, all right. You had a device that came out a year and a half, 2 years ago when 4K was still popping and you didn't. Oh, okay. A watch. Oh, you got a cellular service. You're going to have a dude surfing in the ocean when you put the smallest water protection meters on your phones. You can only go 3 feet with an iPhone. You can go 6 or whatever, 10 feet with a Galaxy phone. Like, Apple just does the bare minimum to try and make something sound like it's something, and it's just not. And at the end of the day, I got an iPhone 7. I'm a loser, too. I know I'm hip to the scene. I'm a crackhead to the ecosystem. I got a Max, so my calendars, everything blings and whoozes. I got iPads. I get it. But I'm not going to sit here and get excited about it and act like it's something cool and they ain't doing
stuff. So are you going to buy one of the new ones?
No.
Oh. Well, actually, let's break this down here. I know, okay, Owen, I know you use an iPhone. Jeff, I know you use an iPhone. Mark,
no.
What are you?
No.
That's right. No. I'm sorry. You've got a Pixel. You've got a Pixel.
I'm Android. Google.
I'm Android. Mark?
I got an iPhone 7.
Okay, so we're split 50-50.
Well, I'm waiting to see what the new Pixel is going to be about. And if I don't like that, I'm just going to wait for a Samsung next year to come out with the iPhone XI, and I'm going to get that because I'm not going to get this iPhone X.
What's your odds making it? I don't go ahead here, but the Pixel, you think is going to be good?
I love the Pixel. A lot of my friends have the Pixel. I think the Pixel is a sexy, thin, fast
phone. Thank you very much.
It's just like you, Jeff. That's they modeled it after the Jeff. That's right. They call it the Jeff Pixel. Code word. Jeff Pixel 2.
I'm a JJ too, you know.
There you go. It's a great phone.
It is. It really is a wonderful phone.
I'm waiting to see what the next one is. And if that doesn't move me, I'm switching to Android. So it's got to happen. I'm finally done. Apple's not getting me anymore. I'm not going to do it.
I do want to cover some of the other bits of the announcement because, of course, there was the Apple Watch, which, Owen, it had you excited back in Series 2 for a while. This is new in that it has an LTE radio. And this has been hinted at for a while. I actually know some of the people who made this happen. It's been a challenge because of battery life and because of RF design, but they think they've finally got it nailed down. Does this make it a different product? Because it had previously been tied to your phone. You had to have an iPhone to make this thing work properly. Does the fact that now I can leave my phone at home make this
like you're ever going to leave your phone at home?
True. This is true.
Hey, ever?
This is true.
Don't you feel naked without your phone?
I predict this is going to be one of their best-selling items.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
For one main reason. So my daughter, again, I'm in the tech bubble for certain things. She's had an iPhone Touch or whatever since she was 3. She's had her own device. She's had her own capability of text messaging and all that kind of stuff. The biggest thing is why I switched her to a phone when she was 6 is so I could track her. So I know where she's at. I know what she's doing. She's always got a signal. She doesn't need to be on Wi-Fi. If I could have given
surveillance dad.
Yeah. A watch.
Modern dad.
Oh, man, that's going to be on and popping. You know how many people have iPhones, have kids, and don't want to give their child a cell phone, but they can say, hey, you can listen to Kids Bop on your watch with some headphones or that little speaker, and if there's an emergency, I can call you, and if Kalamazoo rolls up to the park with a candy van, I can at least track you down the street. You're an Apple Watch and throws it out the window. But this device is great for children. It's an actual functioning device that works. There's a lot of other kids watches that they sell you and they usually charge $39 a month. There's a Mickey Mouse Club watch, but there's no closeness to the technology that's in this thing. And some of those watches go for $200-$300. So I think this is going to be a big
hit. How much does this one run?
Especially with children.
Oh, this is what, $300?
$499 for LTE.
That's it. Right, for the radio. And $10
a month. $10 a month for the plan.
But is it completely untethered, or do you need to set it up with a phone and have it sync?
It's on its own. It's got its own.
But you still need an iPhone to set it up.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can run without the iPhone. It can be connected without the iPhone, but I don't know how you're going to set it up unless you're using an iOS device. That's how you actually get it set up.
Well, I figured most people that would buy it would be people with iPhones.
Well, here's my thing, though. We have had a decent watch that's been connected for a long time. It's at IFA, they released the Samsung Gear S3, which had an LTE radio, had great battery life, multi-day battery life. And the big selling point was it's no longer tethered to the phone. It's been a popular watch, but very few people are using the LTE features. Very few apps are utilizing the LTE features because they realize if I'm not going to do a text message on my watch, I'm going to pull my phone out and do it that way. I'm not going to do anything on my watch if I've got my phone because it's so much easier to enter the data. I'm wondering if that holds over to the Apple Watch crowd, or did Apple actually do something that's gonna make this really work without a phone?
You know what Apple does? Marketing.
True.
They've also got a premium customer base that's doesn't care about spending an extra $100 to get the cellular monitor or $10 a month to pay for the cell service. Like for me personally, I could not get enough use out of it to warrant $10 a month. No. But I think there are enough Apple customers who would just spring for it because they get the top of the line thing.
I don't get it. I don't get the need for that because I'm going to have my phone with me everywhere. And like Howard Stern, I'd be afraid of getting wrist cancer.
even when you're surfing, Jeff, you didn't see the commercial? Dude's out there surfing.
Oh, yeah.
It says dinner's ready. He's like, aloha, mama. And he comes in. Like, you know, there's, again, marketing is the difference with Apple and Samsung when it comes to their accessories. Apple makes you think that you need it. And more people than not, like you said, our premium customers are going to buy it. Them say, oh, sure, I'll do the $10 and at 6 months at some point maybe turn it off or figure out that they like it. Hey, you're going to the gym. You put your playlist on. You don't have to carry your phone around with you. You can lock it up in the closet and keep it moving. Like, there's a lot of different things that make that appealing.
That's a big use case that Apple's targeting is workout and exercise. And they're really, like, going after the Nike niche, which is, like, creating an aspirational brand and an aspirational product, which is, like, buy this thing, you'll go and work out, and you'll listen to music on it while you're working out. We're the same people who buy Nike, like, never go to the gym. But
and it works. I mean, Apple has made a fortune on that. They don't have to have the biggest specs or the newest tech or the greatest design, even though some people think it is the greatest design. They just have to sell an experience. And the experience that they sell is second to none right now. So does this fit the experience? Is the connected watch going to make you a better athlete, a better mother, a better parent, a better whatever? And I think you can make a pretty good case that they've done that. I mean, people will pay a premium even if they won't actually use the feature because they like to think that they could use the feature.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's some crazy stat like 78% of people that sign up for memberships at the gym only go twice a year. So, I mean,
it's a business model.
Yeah.
It's a business model. You sell it to people. You sell them lifestyle. It's going to make them feel better. You know, hey, I counted how many steps today. Oh, wow. That's horrible steps. I need to take this watch off. I'm embarrassed.
It's like subscribing to The Economist or The New Yorker. It just piles up guilt.
Yes. So. Yes.
There could be a new Apple Watch that counts your steps twice or three times for an extra $50 a month. I mean,
that'd be nice. Right?
Again, you have, like I said, everything about all this stuff just drives me crazy. So they tell you that they have lightning charging now. It doesn't come with a lightning charger. It still comes with the small block. And then you've got to buy a new block that's like the size of my fist to get the lightning charging. Like, if they were so brave, they should just been like, look, we're switching over to Type-C for the phones now. Like, we want everything to be lightning. We want everything to be faster. It's going to be better for you.
Now, where they're going, I predict the XI or the Y or the 11 or whatever the heck it is going to have no orifice.
Whoa.
It is going to be absolutely solid.
Whoa. I mean, yeah, that's Apple's dream, right? Apple's always wanted that, and they could do it now with wireless charging.
Yeah.
And people will still buy it in droves, and they will line up for it and say, look what my phone has. None of the things that your phone has.
It'll finally be waterproof.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone describe a port as an orifice.
I was going to let that slide, Mark. We were like 30 seconds past it. You just brought it right back to it.
Couldn't let it go.
The thing of it, too, is, okay, so you're going to wireless charge. And cool story. Good thing I got this cellular watch because it's going to take me 4 days to charge my phone. I'll be back next week to pick it up and use it again for a day before the battery dies.
Well, I'm just thinking data transfer. Because if you're connecting to your phone via Bluetooth or even Wi-Fi, it's going to take a long time to move things on and off versus just being wired in.
That's how I do it now.
People don't really do that very much.
Yeah, I don't wire
now. They go to the cloud.
I do. Well, because my phone is also my storage device. Well, of course, okay, I'm Android, but when I'm traveling, it is a fantastic way to move a lot of encrypted
data. Is it like a USB
data.
Stick?
Kinda. Yeah, but it's always on me. So I know if someone is trying to copy off my USB sticks, like happened the last time I was in a certain Asian nation when my USB sticks in my room were not the same ones that I left there when in the morning. That was the weirdest experience, by
kind
the way.
Kind of Snowden documents are you carrying?
Nothing. It was all like just documents for what I was doing on that job, but that was just strange. Wow. But okay, let's move away from the conspiracy stuff because there is another Apple story here that I think we should touch on, and that is the reformatting of the retail space. Apple is of the mind, speaking of experience, that the Apple experience needs to be more than just buying stuff. That was the old Apple. The new Apple is a town square where we can have discussions about politics and humanity and philosophy and then buy a bunch of Apple stuff. Is this the experience? Is this the new experience, the new Apple?
So a couple things about this. One, they used to have that. They used to have the auditoriums and the events. I remember I moderated Jason Calacanis and Nick Denton at the Apple Store auditorium, right? Mm-hmm. And so it was a public space where you could do that. And, you know, here's the problem. Browsing in the old physical sense is absolutely dead. I used to go wandering out. When I was bored, lunchtime, I'd go out. I'd hit a bookstore. I'd hit a record store. I'll tell you what that is later. I'd hit Crazy Eddie's, or I'd hit Best Buy, or I'd hit the Apple Store. And years ago, there was nothing left to buy in the Apple Store, right? Just you wanted tchotchkes. You wanted a couple of things to go in and buy. I used to like the store at headquarters where you could get the cool T-shirt or something. They don't think like that anymore. They just—it's all you can get is a few things that are way too expensive. So why go in? I don't see it being a town square.
Well, what do you need to be a town square to actually encourage town square like activities?
Activities, education, talks,
coffee.
Reasons to go in. Coffee,
yeah. Pizza.
Yeah, this was the Starbucks model where they would encourage people to just come in and hang out and get free Wi-Fi. They've since move back from that a little bit, but I think Apple's just trying to do the same. I don't know if they're offering all the right incentives to Jeff's point to go there.
The only incentive is what you just said, food. You know, if you wanted me to go sit in Apple, let's put in a Salad Works or some frappe, rappe, crappe, and have me sit there and feel like I could talk to somebody. Because, I don't know, last month at the Apple Store is when something broke. The time before that is when something broke. The time before that is when something broke. And other than when you look at somebody, you think they're cute or you think that they're insanely weird looking, you don't even pay attention to other people. I'm in here to do what I do and get out. Like, nobody's going in there to talk. Have you seen the comment sections on Facebook and you think you want to have a town square? Granted, Apple is usually in an affluent area, but you still think that you want to have a town square of people talking to each other and becoming friends over Apple devices? Who makes – I need to get a check with these people. I need to go sit on a board and just throw out these frivolous, stupid things because they got way too much money, way too much time in their hands. Nobody's trying to sit in Apple and have a conversation. You're better off give me a free cup of coffee if I come in there and sit for 10 minutes. Other than that, I don't think this is going to work.
You know, J.C. Calhoun in our chat room has a good point. He said, look, for something to be a town square, an actual town square, it has to be public. Because if it's private space, if it's private property, you could get kicked off for any reason. It's entirely up to
them. I
think
J.J. is going to go in there, start complaining, and he'll get kicked out.
There you go. And then we know it's not a town square.
Yeah.
True story.
True story. All right. One last Apple story before we move on. I promise we have to move on because other things happened in the tech world, other than Apple.
I don't know. We got some ads to do too. We got to get this money.
We got to get the money. But I want to do one more story, one more quick story, because actually it's kind of fun, and that is Apple thinking about a $3 billion bid for Bain Capital stake of Toshiba. Now we know that Toshiba's been trying to sell off their chip division because they had a disastrous year with their nuclear power division, and they need to pay for it. Now, Apple, I think the timing is perfect for them because they are undergoing shortages of NAND parts. In fact, everyone is undergoing shortages of NAND parts. That's why they bumped the price of the iPad Pro by $50, because the manufacturers right now are switching over to a 3D NAND process, which is starting to constrain the supply of flash memory. Apple is looking at flash memory as the last main component that they really don't have control over. They make their own CPU. They make their own image processor. They make their own DSPs. They have their own semi-private facilities for creating all the structure needed for their devices. But the NAND is not theirs. So does this make sense? The thing that bothers me about this is the factory capacity that they're looking to buy will ultimately need to be upgraded to 3D NAND as well. So they're not just paying $3 billion for Toshiba's equipment. They're also paying an additional $2 to $3 billion in the future to upgrade all of that to 3D capacity.
But they have, pardon me, more money than the Pope.
They do.
So true. Why not spend some?
But, I mean, they're not known for spending money frivolously. No. Even Beats, they're going to make money off of it.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't do many deals, but and especially they don't really buy into the components industry usually. Like they do chip design now, but they don't actually manufacture the chips. They outsource that for other companies to make them. This, I think, is to reduce their reliance on Samsung, which has a dominant position in this industry, and they feel like they're going to get squeezed if they don't find an alternative.
Yeah, this has always been an Apple trade. They want to own the core technologies. That's why they didn't just license a processor. They took ARM and then they made it into something of their own. The same thing with their image processor, the same thing with their DSPs. I think it makes sense for them to have a card that they could show to Samsung and say, you better cut us a better deal, otherwise we just move everything over here. However, at the moment, that's an empty threat because Samsung is the leader in 3D NAND right now. They have almost moved over their entire production capacity. And they could say, well, you're 2 years behind us in being able to meet the 3D NAND demand. So you just blew $3 billion for a bluff.
I think Mark hit it on the head. And maybe they're a little bit smarter than us, even though they can't do it in design. But they do plan things well. So I think that they have a long game that we're not seeing if they make this move. And again, they have so much money, it doesn't matter. It's not really a loss. They're just saying, oh, instead of doing something from the ground up, we have our foot in the ground. And then we make the leap next year or whatever they're going to do. But they have to have something stirring for them to want to do this more than just a bluff, I think. But, again, got to do something because, as I said, Galaxy iPhone 8, Samsung's out here doing everything. Right. And it sucks for Apple in that respect.
And to be fair, the $3 billion, it's not a fire sale price, but it's close. I mean, Toshiba really needs to dump this unit. They've run into regulatory problems. They've run into problems with their partner Seagate, which didn't want them to dump the unit. And so, you know, even if Apple never uses the capacity, they're going to be able to sell it back for more than $3 billion to somebody else.
My colleagues at Bloomberg broke some news on this. So Apple would probably come in as an investor and not sort of buy the whole thing outright. So it would be as part of a consortium and, you know, if the Toshiba unit could conceivably continue selling to other suppliers, it wouldn't be an Apple exclusive deal. But I mean, Apple has shown a willingness to fall behind in order to reduce its reliance on a competitor. You look at like the Google Maps, like they wanted to pull it off the iPhone. They didn't want to renew the deal. Good point. And they put out a Maps product that was far inferior.
A laughing stock even.
It was entertaining, you know, to see directions that included things like drive through lake or, you know, fall off bridge.
But we never saw the actual financials, but they probably saved themselves a lot of money by not having renegotiating that deal with Google and paying out the licensing fees for the maps. So they're a shrewd company, and like Owen said, it could just be a long game.
Or if you waited until Google said, oh, we're not going to renew you, and then you're scrambling to make your own thing. Mm-hmm. Like I said, they play long games for things. And I just can't see them making that move without having some sort of purpose. I don't believe in them as far as design, but I believe in them as far as making money. Right. They make that money.
And if you look at Apple in terms of the industry as a whole, of course, their sales and their marketing is second to none. But also, their logistics, especially long chain logistics, looking far into the future, has been the envy of everyone in Silicon Valley. They're making moves for stuff that they're not going to use for 10 years.
Yeah, that's what Tim Cook has always been good at. That's what he did at IBM. That was his main role at Apple until Steve Jobs stepped away. He's just like the supply chain operations guy.
Yep. So this could be one of these things where it looks like a horrible, horrible thing until it looks like it's genius.
Yeah, one last Apple question.
Yes.
Do we know when the visitor center is opening?
No. I'm assuming that people like Mark are going to get the invitation before everybody else. Wait, were you at the Steve Jobs Amphitheater?
I was not. We had a few people there. Our Apple reporter, Alex Webb, Mark Gurman, but I didn't make it down.
I have to say, for at least the first hour of the event, there were far more comments about the amphitheater than there were about any technologies being released. People were hyped. They loved it.
It looks really slick from the photos. It's like this weird underground, you know, like glass. It kind of looks like the Fifth Avenue store, but in right. the middle of an orchard. Yeah.
Let's put it this way. If you took the Apple logo off, all their buildings look like evil lairs. Let's like keep it real. Like I'm waiting for Skeletor to come walking down with a cane and just give off a speech. Like everything they make just seems like a Bond villain had way too much oil money from his family and was like, let's make everything glass and sexy. Like, I mean, it is, but I'm just saying, if you took the Apple logo off, everything they make looks evil.
And I think they're going to have a visitor center, but you have to go through the gift shop on the way out.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
where.
Yeah,
and the
yeah.
gift shop is just iPhones.
$1,000 yeah. items, yeah.
There you go.
Well, gentlemen, let's move away from Apple. This has been great, but we do have some other news to cover. I want to cover something non-contentious, something that's nice and easy, that's not going to cause any conflict, that's not going to you know result in any screaming matches. So how about after the break, we talk about Facebook potentially subverting our democracy? Yeah. Sound good? Okay. Let's get right to that. But first, here's some messages from Uncle Leo.
Sorry to interrupt, but I want to tell you all about Texture. Oh, my gosh. Texture is awesome. Texture is the Netflix for magazines. I have to say, some of the best journalism is still being done in magazines all over the country, all over the world. And there's I would say every week there's something I want to read in a magazine. Maybe one or two articles in the New Yorker or National Geographic or Vanity Fair or Rolling Stone or Billboard or Hollywood Reporter. And the problem is if I were to subscribe to all of those, it would cost a packet. And I certainly don't want to go out and spend all that money to get the newsstand editions, not to mention the coffee table clutter. Texture's awesome. Put Texture on your iPad or your tablet. And now you've got access for a low flat rate every month to more than 200 of the best magazines. National Geographic, Wired, Fast Company, PC Magazine. What's nice about Texture is they have the curated sections. Here's highlights. The Wonder of Gal Gadot from Rolling Stone or Healthy No-Cook Meals from Shape or Discipline Mistakes Pushover Parents Make from Parents. Now, it makes it easy to find. There's always something great to read. Here's the top 10 reads. Here's daily news featuring Reuters. Collections of daily roundup. Of course, I subscribe to the top stories in science and tech. Billboard, Newsweek, Consumer Reports, Popular Mechanics. All my favorite magazines are in here, and I don't have to buy a subscription. I don't have to buy a newsstand issue. And by the way, when you get the magazine on, and it looks great on your tablet. In fact, that's why it's one of Apple's top 2016 iPad apps. Texture gives you every page in the magazine. You can zoom in, make it easy to read. Images are fantastic because you can zoom in on the images. And I have to say, you know, if you get National Geographic or Shutterfly or any photography magazine, the print version is not nearly as good as the tablet digital version because it's not screened. You're looking at, you know, what is effectively the original photo. I love it. New York Magazine, People. Yeah, I got to read got to get my gossip fix. Thing is, no one needs to know. I just subscribe to all of them with one subscription with Texture. Get every magazine you could want, all the articles you could ever want to read, bonus material you don't get on the newsstand, like video. Next time you're on a trip, next time you're taking some time off, or you just want to go to bed and have some light reading, you'll be glad you have Texture. Try it free right now at texture.com/twit. 14 days free. See all the magazines you can get. See how easy it is to read every page. Current issue plus back issues. Texture.com/twit. And we thank Texture for their support. 14 days free. Texture. You'll love it.
Thanks, Leo. All right, let's get back to the action. Now, we have to set some ground rules here because it's going to be very easy for us to go off on a political rant. We really want to talk about the tech. We want to talk about the policies that are in place with our online advertisers, online
entities.
I think
he's talking to me.
I don't know. This is a general note to anyone who might be listening. We do know now some of the facts behind a recent spat of very interesting ad buys that have been happening across networks, not just at Facebook, but Facebook is in the crosshairs right now. Specifically, Facebook has disclosed that roughly $100,000 worth of ads were purchased by fake accounts and sites that were run by known Russian troll organizations. One group was known as Secure Borders, and it ran a site, a Facebook group, and it bought ads across many of the groups that were identified as susceptible to a nudge in voting. In fact, Carson, if you go to my computer, these are some of the ads, ad buys that were showing up across Facebook. And of course, we've seen this before. You take a little bit of truth, you take a meme, and then you just kind of plaster it everywhere. And you're not.
There doesn't even need to be truth, though.
No.
Well, yeah, but it helps. It
suspicion,
helps.
A little suspicion.
A suspicion, right. You take a little bit of suspicion. So these are the kinds of ads that were being plastered across all the different ad networks. Facebook has identified them. And now people are starting to get past the shock phase and saying, why didn't you do anything about this? You know, you saw this coming. You just took the money. $100,000 is what they've identified right now. Yeah. But even they have admitted.
I think Mark Warner said some was literally paid in rubles.
Right. It's going to be more. It's going to be way, way more. So the question is here is, does Facebook have a responsibility to stop this? I mean, they're not a national watchdog. They're not the ones who are trying to, who need to make sure that a foreign entity is not interfering in an election. They just sell ads, and they have an ad buy that they offered.
Let me jump in first. No, they don't. To be honest with you, I mean, far be it from the American people that we're not that bright, that people just fall for anything, but somebody paid money for something and somebody put money up to do what they wanted to do. Now, you can get into the semantics, but then you start saying, well, when does it stop? What makes your ad more viable or credible than my ad and I'm paying for it and how I want to manipulate it? Now, some of those things are very blatant. Like you said, there's no truth to them. But at what point is this company supposed to say, all right, I'm not going to take this money, which we don't really make money on anything anyway, besides snooping on everybody for an ad? You take the money, you put the ad up. It's not their job. I mean, other than the bot part of it, but I mean, they don't even need to have fake troll ads when you say it that way. They could have whatever somebody's name is sitting in a room just posting these ads, and people are susceptible to them because a lot of Americans are dumb, and that's just the bottom line of it. Maybe if we spent more time in education, then people wouldn't fall for everything they see on the internet, but they do. So I mean, like, I'm not even mad at Facebook. Like, there are bigger problems that we have than Facebook manipulation on votes. Yeah. That's just me.
Let me do full disclosure here for a second. As I started the News Integrity Initiative at CUNY, which has money from Craig Newmark, Facebook, and the Ford Foundation and others. So full disclosure done. I think there's a fundamental change in the architecture of media, including advertising here. And we keep on trying to bring over our old presumptions of old gatekeeper mass media into this new world. Google and Facebook enabled anyone to advertise anything. That was never possible before, right? Padres Country Jams, right? You could sell that stuff the world around now. That was never, ever possible before. Well, good. God bless. It's like blogs. Nobody could publish before. YouTube. Nobody could make TV shows before. Now everybody can. So now anybody can advertise. As a result, you have a problem of scale. And so now that anybody and everybody can advertise, that means that other bad guys will now manipulate the system, right? That's why Google had Matt cuts. That's why they had to worry about the spam. There is an expense that these companies are going to have to go to. I think, JJ, I'll agree and disagree with you to this extent. Getting bombarded with propaganda, hate, lies, bigotry, misogyny is not a good user experience. And at some level, I think that Facebook has to worry about that, number one. Number two, I agree with you, though. They put up ads. Anybody can buy ads now. They want to buy these ads. What I think they should be is a lot more transparent. I think that Facebook should be revealing the ads and especially the targeting criteria for these ads. Both Facebook and Google should be revealing how they are manipulated, thus how people are trying to manipulate us. Now, Facebook's argument has been that legally they can't reveal it because of privacy. What, bots now have privacy? That's absurd. So they're going to hand over the data to – they've already handed it over to Mueller. They're going to hand it over to Congress. It's going to get out anyway. I think Facebook should get way ahead of this and say, here's how the bad guys are trying to convince you. One last point. It's also been argued that before all political ads had to be public. You had to know what was what on TV or radio. But that's not true, because ever since the invention of direct mail and robocalls, there's been dark advertising around politics. So there's nothing new there.
The companies, Facebook chief among them, and Google too, like to position themselves as these neutral platforms. But they do police what goes on there. When's the last time you've seen a porn ad on Facebook or Google? So they, if I haven't personally looked at the foreign campaign finance law, but I don't know that Facebook is necessarily off the hook if they knew what they were taking money for.
Do you think they knew? That's the big question to me. Is with given the scale and given that there was Cambridge Analytica and all that stuff out there, because I think that's a key question. Could they have known? And if they knew, what were they obligated to do? How hard was it to know, you think?
I personally think they probably didn't know, but I think that is probably a question Mueller would be asking the company and asking for emails and asking for documentation related to these ad buys.
The next interesting piece of this is if Cambridge Analytica's, and that's been overblown in terms of its capabilities.
Right, right.
But if targeting criteria were passed over from the campaign to these Ruskies, that's collusion.
Yeah, well, there is another part of the story, which is $100,000 of an ad buy is actually nothing. That is a drop in the bucket. However, where the analytics goes crazy is how effective it was. Yeah. You know, if you look at a standard ad and you expect 1x efficiency, these ads were something like 10,000x efficiency. That only happens if you really know how to target it. You had some sort of inside information. This wasn't just shotgunning out. You had someone in the country who was able to look at the demographics, look at the groups that were forming on Facebook, maybe tie that into some local grassroots groups and know this is a group you should target. These are keywords you should target. And that's actually part of the Mueller investigation. It's not necessarily where did the ads happen, because we know they did. It's under whose direction.
And sometimes we give things a lot more credit than they deserve. You also got to think that the guy running for president was saying lock her up and crooked Hillary. So putting Hillary Clinton behind a cage and regular people getting millions of clicks and views on it happened without collusion, advertising money or anything. It was some dude named Jebediah in a cave down in Alabama was like, oh, lock her up. And then he put it out there and it was a meme and it went crazy. So, I mean, yes, you have to kind of know what's going on. But the guy that was running for president was a meme machine. All he was doing was spitting out chunks of stupid information that was easily reverberated through like-minded communities.
Doing that is completely within our laws, though. But for a foreign government to try to influence the U.S. election is illegal.
Yes. Right. I'm with you on that. But again, at the same time, I'm saying as far as my feeling about Facebook's issue with it, you know, is it wrong? Yes. Am I mad at Facebook? No. Could they do better? Sure. And as you were saying earlier about the porn and stuff like that, there's certain filters they have for that kind of thing. For a meme with words in it, they're not really checking those to make sure that it's factual or not factual. They wouldn't do anything if that was the case, because, I mean, people in the chat are talking about advertising integrity. I don't know. Apple just told me they made the greatest iPhone X and ain't nothing but a game. So, I mean, really.
We were done with Apple.
Hey, got to loop it around. That's good TV right there.
I mean,
there.
I think you could argue that Facebook could not have expected this was coming and therefore did not build in safeguards for it. But you can defend against this. You can you can look for where's the money coming from and what is the type of content. And if it's a Russian source with connections to the Kremlin and it's trying to place a political ad, especially during election season, you should probably turn down that.
But there's a big if there. If you knew it had ties to the Russian money. If you don't know that, then it is legal.
We know now in hindsight, because we have the chance to actually examine the data. But I mean, doing that in real time is tricky. I mean, they get an ungodly number of ad buys. And again, $100,000 wouldn't trip anything.
Well, to give you an idea of the scale, Occupy Democrats, which is not journalistic, neither is it Russian. It's just an advocacy group. During the election, the height of the election, they may just make memes. That's all they do is make memes and video memes. And they were getting between 100 and 300 million impressions a week on Facebook.
Gangsters.
Yeah,
and that was also part of the Russian campaign too. It wasn't just like ad buys. They were creating fake bot accounts to sort of drum up these memes organically.
Yeah. Yep. Which actually ties into another bit of the Facebook story, and that is we now know that there were some algorithmically generated buy targets. And remember, we're all about the purity of the algorithm. The algorithm doesn't have any bias. It just looks at what's popular, and that's what it tries to sell against. But because of the traffic that was running through Facebook, you had topics like Jew hater or black people ruin everything. You could actually buy ads against those.
You know what? I bet I could go in today and buy puppy killer.
Yeah.
Right? It's not an indication to me so much of Facebook as it is an indication of what there are awful people in our country talking about this crap.
I mean, that's the point. That's not Facebook's problem. That's not their fault. They didn't create those ad buys or those targets. It's just an algorithm that's looking, this is all the traffic.
People are talking about hating Jews, and that's the world we're in now.
Right. And you can't really fix that unless you have a human or many humans sitting down and going, no, that's not something we want to sell against.
But they have thousands of humans, and they just hired thousands of moderators. So this is something that they can fix, and they say that they're trying to fix it. And Twitter had a policy even before any of this, which failed them recently, but to block offensive terms so that Twitter is not profiting off of hate.
Well, it's good to know that America has never paid a PR company to do propaganda overseas and involved with other people's countries and nations. I mean, it's just great to know that cool.
This is true. This is true.
I forgot. We did that? My bad. I'm just throwing in there. You know, everybody's hating other countries, but we're out here doing the same exact thing on massive scales. Last time I checked, there was a good story about $500,000 the American government was spending on propaganda videos. But that's neither here nor there. Got this story wrapped up. We done? Next one? We good?
I think so. I think. Can we put Facebook to bed? I mean, yes, this is something that's going to be investigated. This is something that we need to know how this happened so that they could put some preventative measures into place. However, I'm of the mind, I don't know what the panel thinks, but I'm the mind that this is, you cannot drop this on Facebook store.
Well, let me ask it a different way. So Google's Don't Be Evil, which was not a pronouncement from the mountaintop. It was licensed to employees to keep the company from being evil because being evil is bad business. Maybe it should have been Be Good. And in this time when there is huge pressure from competitors, from, you know, in Europe, it's from publishers. Here it's from Yelp, from governments going after them. These companies, and I like them. I'm wearing my Google t-shirt today. It's a nice one, isn't it? New York, dude. right. I like these companies. I read books about them. I'm generally a fan of them. But they hold a huge responsibility. They hold the internet in their hands. They thus hold the future of society in their hands. We can't make them responsible for everything. But the question is, under what standards and ethics and morals do they believe they should operate? So if your Facebook could come along and say, well, it's illegal or illegal. No, you know, Facebook, I think, could come along and say, we should make all political ads public and you do it in the bright light of day. That'd be a principle to operate
under.
Yes,
it would.
Right?
Yes.
But another principle they operate under is free speech, and that any schmo can now sell their jam and sell their viewpoints. What are the larger, and got the perfect guy here to talk about it with, what are the larger ethical considerations for these companies, given where they stand in our world now? If you were their ethical consultant, what would you say to them about how they should operate?
Well, I would say that I think we all recognize that even though you're a private company or even a publicly traded company, once you grow to an X amount of the market and you control a certain amount of mind share and traffic and communications that's going across the world, you cannot operate like every other company on the planet that might be 100th, 1,000th your size. We've seen that with Google. We've seen that with Facebook. We've seen that with Apple and Microsoft. They're held to higher standards because their decisions can have so much more weight than everybody else. So the ethical consideration would be Facebook. We understand that you're operating as a business. However, because you control so much of the world's mind share, it's now your responsibility. It's incumbent upon you as a corporation which has been granted entity status by the Supreme Court of the United States to act responsibly. And acting responsibly means transparency. Yeah. Maybe not being the police, but at least let people know where these things are coming from. And that's even saying that much kind of brings up a bad taste in my mouth, because it really sounds as if I'm asking Facebook to be a gatekeeper, which I don't want. But I think we can all admit that there's something more that they're responsible for that MySpace would never be have been responsible for, right? There's something different?
I think there's like been a shift in the larger consciousness away from like letting Facebook and Google off the hook for this type of stuff. And I think they are like really being held to a higher standard in the mainstream. I mean, you see, like, there was a Financial Times op-ed today saying that the tech companies are too powerful. And this is like a theme you see in like a lot of the business books that are coming out now. And I'm curious, like, how that changing sentiment affects how they operate. I mean, I don't know that antitrust action is going to be taken, especially from the U.S., because it's hard to argue consumer harm, and it's especially when so much of what they offer is free. It's hard to...
And there is competition for everything but the advertising.
Right.
So it's not super effective competition, but it's there.
And it doesn't sound like this government is going to be the one that's going to push that type of case, like this sort of anti-regulatory... Europe for sure is continuing to push hard.
Well, how about this? Let's jump to Europe next.
Okay.
Let's get off Facebook, and we'll talk about some other good news, like Google being fined a record amount of money for anti-monopolistic tendencies. Yeah, let's do that. But before we do that, let's jump back over to the other side of the studio, because Uncle Leo needs to have another word with the Twit Army.
I hope you're enjoying this week's Twit. I'm sorry I couldn't be here with you all. Boy, this sounds like fun.
No, you're not.
I want to interrupt you briefly just to thank our sponsor, IT Pro TV. These guys have been with us since they started. In fact, they're very, Tim and Don, the founders, are very clear. They were influenced by Twit and by Tech TV before it. They were IT trainers forever. And they saw what we did at Twit, and they said, you know, it'd be kind of cool to do something like that, but for IT professionals or people who want to become IT professionals. And IT Pro TV was born. Of course, now they far exceeded anything I ever dreamed of. They have 5 studios. They're putting out 125 hours of content, fresh content every week. You can watch them live. Their back catalog has thousands of hours of on-demand training in every category. Certified ethical hacker, Kali Linux, Microsoft Server, ITIL, AWS SysOps, CompTIA Security Plus. All the certs that help you get the job, all the information that helps you keep the job at IT Pro TV. And they have a team solution. I really want to emphasize this. If you work on an IT team, and IT Pro TV's team solution gives you group pricing and a supervisor portal that allows you to control the training schedule, create custom groups, training assignments. You can see individual analytics, group analytics, view logins. You can check in on viewing time, video downloads, track course completion, and more. So it is a training solution, the ultimate training solution for any IT team. And, of course, it's convenient because you can stream it over anything. They've got apps for Chromecast, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, a great Apple TV app. Of course, you can watch on your PC. You can use their iOS or Android dedicated apps. You don't have to send your staff off-site for training. They can do it from their desk during lunch. IT Pro TV. Here's the deal. Go to itpro.tv/twit, and you can find out how it can offer you as an individual or a team the best IT training solution. Get the cert so you get the job. Then once you got the job, get new skills and keep the skills you've got. Keep them up to date with IT Pro TV. If you go to itpro.tv/twit, you're going to get a free 7-day trial when you sign up for an individual monthly membership. And you got to use the offer code TWIT30, because that's going to also give you 30% off your subscription for the lifetime, as long as you stay active. 30% off. And if you're on a team or you run a team or you want to get something for your team, you could sign up for a free demo of the supervisor portal. That's all at itpro.tv/twit. Make sure you tell them you heard about it on Twit. itpro.tv/twit. Use the code TWIT30. You get a free 7 days and 30% off for the life of your individual membership at IT Pro TV. Now back to the Twit crew.
Leo said he was unhappy not to be here. I don't believe him.
No, I've seen his Google Plus and his Twitter feed. He's wonderful,
very
place.
Happy.
You still use Google Plus?
Whoa, wait, okay.
I didn't even know it was still on. Some of us have
great interactions on Google Plus. I'm just going to say,
it's a place where you have only three people. Of course you do. I used to love it. I used to adore it. But
it works for some groups. Like on my know-how group, we've got 12,000 people. It's incredibly active.
JJ's, I can see him winding up.
I understand it's a ghost town in a lot of places, but one of the nice things about that is for the geeks and the marginalized, it's become a great place. I don't have to worry about extraneous messaging. It's just what we want. And
I think the FBI should investigate that group. if there's 12,000 people on a Google group, the FBI should definitely.
They're all bots and Russians.
They should definitely investigate that group. I'm just saying, the CIA, FBI, somebody, ATF, somebody get in there. Just make sure everything's kosher. I love you, Father, but the Lord knows we got to find out what's going on with those 12,000 people. Secondly, Google still has social media. I haven't used anything on Google besides Google Photos and my email. I don't know anything else that Google does. So that's neither here nor there. But good job.
I totally get it. I understand. And you're right, because a lot of the groups that I am a part of on Google Plus, they've emptied out and they've all moved over to Facebook. But there are those of us who are loyalists until Google announces that they're going to pull Hangouts.
I loved Google Plus in the day.
Yeah.
But
wait, when was the day?
The day it came out?
Tuesday?
even you can't resist being cruel with Google Plus.
This is true.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's do some happy Google news. This is actually something I'm very interested in, even though we have very little details about it. Google's going to announce a brand new Pixel on October 4th.
Yay, Pixel
are we excited?
My Pixel is clapping.
Yes. Pixel's clapping. This is about as much details as we have, though. We know that there was a bulletin board that went up in Boston, and all the bulletin board was to say, go to this website about Ask More, and if you go to Ask More, it asks for your email address and the last six numbers of your social security. No, that was Equifax. Sorry. It asks for your email address, and it looks like they're going to announce a new Pixel, maybe a new Chromebook, maybe.
Oh, I pray. I love my Chromebook Pixel. I own four of them.
I have one now, and I love it.
I love it.
And
absolutely
I got one each for my parents.
But it's getting old, and I'm not sure about the new ones. And so I want a high-end Chromebook. I have lived entirely on Chromebook, entirely, for almost 3 years now.
I don't know anyone who has a Pixel who doesn't like it, who doesn't think
even
it
Leo used
phone.
To make fun of them and growl. He now likes them.
Yeah, they're just incredibly
well. I live la vida Google. When I travel, I carry my Pixel C, which is the tablet. I don't even carry a laptop anymore.
Okay, that's I will draw my line there. I love my Acer Chromebook. I have an R13 because it also does Android apps, and it's a convertible, and it's very low cost. It was a $300 Chromebook. But if I can only carry one device, it's not going to be that. It'll be
Can I ask you a tech question? So that dialogue box you get once or always, I answered wrong a few times. And when I click on, let's say, a Medium link or a New York Times link, it goes to the app, and I don't want it to. I want it to go to the web, and I don't know where to turn that off.
Right. There's actually app preferences. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, it's kind of ham-handed, because unless you know exactly which app preference you want to reset, it resets all your app preferences.
Oh.
I think that's wonderful design, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
it is. Anyway. I love my Chromebook. I want a Chromebook. But here's the JJ question, too. What can they do? The Pixel's a darn good phone. What can they do to this that'll make me spend the next $900?
The notch. If they put that notch at the top, $1,000 phone.
And take the fingerprint off the back.
JJ is not impressed.
It's a sexy, boring phone. Like when you hold the phone and you use the phone, it is fast. It's responsive. The camera is amazing. It's just a great phone, but it doesn't excite me per se. When I hold it, I feel happy when I got it in my hands. Again,
what more do you want in life, man?
I need marketing. Jeez. I need a video of a kid in the rain doing some kind of dance that I'm never going to do. I need paint splashing through windows and whisking, and I need the right song to go with it. That's the only difference in these phones. I love my phone, but it's not like I'm sitting here drooling over this phone. They need to do something that makes me feel good about myself having a phone. And as stupid as that sounds, that's why Apple sells so many phones. They make me feel important having this phone. I feel better than most people knowing that I got an iPhone. The phone ain't better than other people's phones, but I feel better having that phone over other phones.
You also
and that's
feel
something
angry.
That the Pixel needs to do.
But wait a minute here, because we have an example of a phone that created excitement, and it created a narrative where I have to have this because this is the next thing, and it's beautiful, and it's greatly designed. It was the Essential phone, which we got a copy of here. We actually had to buy it, and it was hyped. Both Leo, Jason, and I, we all wanted to take it for a spin. We thought it was a great design. This was going to be the Jesus phone, and it was horrible.
Horrible.
I'm sorry.
Not just disappointed, but horrible.
I will say horrible. The camera didn't work right. It crashed consistently. The case was just a fingerprint magnet. That's all it was. It was literally, there was no place you could hold that didn't smudge the phone. The performance was middling, and we managed to crack it in 24 hours. Yeah.
I'd hate to call you a nerd, but you're a nerd. No one in the real world had any kind of hype, desire, or care for that phone. I'm talking about making the world, not just myself, not just the bubble, not just you in the studio where you got to have every single device that comes out on the face of the planet. I'm talking about everybody. When I go to the soccer field, I want that soccer mom to say, I don't want this Samsung 8. I want a Pixel phone. Have you heard about the Pixel phone? And they don't do that. So that's what happens with Pixel. It goes by the wayside, even though it's a sexy phone. Even they are doing something smart. One of my buddies said he has an old Nexus, and they sent him some kind of email where if he sends his Nexus in, they're going to send him the old Pixel because the new Pixel's coming out. That's a great way of adoption, getting all those old phones out of circulation and getting your stockpile out of warehouses. But I mean, like I said, I'm talking about real people. I'm not talking about you drooling over some fake phone that has you hyped up and Uncle Leo hyped up. Uncle Leo gets hyped up over anything with buttons on it, okay?
Well, okay, wait a minute, because here's the Pixel is a boring device. It is an incredibly boring device. And I want a boring device because I don't care about the device. It is just a tool for me to do all the incredible stuff that I get to do.
Well.
I want it to work well. And I mean, I think that's the normal person.
What would it Why don't you have a Pixel? Android?
Because I can't afford it. I'm still rocking a OnePlus One. Okay, I'm holding back.
OnePlus phones are awesome. I love OnePlus phones. They all the RAM they give you, that's a good solid phone.
Yes.
The price is reasonable. I tell people all the time, like if you don't have it in your budget, the problem is you got to put the money outright, mostly because they don't have a lot of plans for that phone. But that is a solid company putting out solid phones end over end. And the thing that gets me most excited is every time I hear that number with RAM. That's the first cell phone I gave my daughter was a OnePlus phone.
There we go.
Ain't no hating on them, player. Now, I mean, there's a training wheels phone, but it was a baller phone. I gave it to my other friend because it was my backup phone. That phone's still living in this world. OnePlus, shout out to you.
Now, the only thing is, it's not just a OnePlus One. I have the unicorn of cell phone plans. You cannot get it anymore, so you have to hold on to it if you have it. It is a prepaid, or pay as you go. $30 a month, T-Mobile, unlimited data, high speed, and 100 minutes of voice. And you can't buy it anymore, but it's $30 a month.
And unlimited data until like 3 gigabytes.
No, 5 gigs. 5 gigs, and it goes from 4G down to like 3G. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's awesome. It's incredible. And even though I had to pay outright, it was still cheaper, way cheaper than buying on a contract.
Can I get you just a $10 Patreon? Because the 40 unlimited right now, dog, is killing it. Unlimited minutes, unlimited data up to 22 gigs, unlimited. Come on, baby. It's $10 more. Let the past go. Let the past go. You had me thinking you was on some Megatron tablet plan, the Jesus plan that Leo got in the 80s. Like that, $30. You can't spend. Come on, man. I'm on T-Mobile. $40 for everybody. All taxes in, dog. You can spend $10 more and call me. That's why you never call me back, because you only got 100 minutes. See? This is ridiculous.
I need that extra $10 for the watch plan that I'm going to be getting. So I can't.
Okay. Nice move with that. You just saved yourself from being bashed down. I was just getting on you. That was a good move right there, that $10. Okay.
All right. Let's move past hardware, because some of us are excited by the Pixel, but nobody is excited by Google lawsuits. And right now we know that Google is going to appeal a record lawsuit, a fine that was slapped on them on June 28th. Now, the EU slapped Google with a $2.7 billion fine for denying, quote, consumers a genuine choice, unquote, by using their search business to steer consumers away from competitors and to Google's controlled shopping platforms. The EU Commission concluded that Google was giving its own shopping services priority placement. And you can see this. If you go to actually, Carson, there's a picture in that story. It shows you what a typical Google page will look like. You've got your ads, but right above it, you get something that doesn't look like an ad, but is actually Google's partners and Google's shopping platform, where they'll get a cut. The fine could have been as much as 10% of Google's annual sales, or $90 billion. But instead, they did the $2.7 billion fine. The EU has set a September 28th deadline for stopping the practice, so Google will no longer be able to prioritize their own ads. But Google has now filed an appeal, and they were probably buoyed by a decision this past week for Intel. Intel was able to force a reexamination of a $1.06 billion euro judgment against them for similar practices, for monopolistic practices. Now, we've had a long history of going back and forth with Google in Europe, be it with Spanish publishers or the right to be forgotten, and now with this idea that they are using their market dominance to push a shopping platform that will get them even more sales. Let's start with the lawsuit itself. On its face, does it make sense to you?
Google Shopping sucks. I was really annoyed when they changed it to like a pay-for-play model, where it used to be a good aggregator of like, you're looking for a product, here's all the retailers that carry it, here's the cheapest price. Now retailers have to pay to get into it. I mean, it's not a good experience. Yeah.
It violates because the original ad model that Google copied was paid placement and search, and Google said, no, we're above that. And then they went and did that with shopping. I also can't imagine they make much money at all with shopping. I can't imagine they make $2.7 billion with the shopping stuff. It's a bad service. It's not there. That's what gives lie to me to the EU argument that this is a huge antitrust. The behemoth is coming in. What? With nothing.
I think the clue there is a $2.7 billion fine. It's way lower than even what a normal fine would be of this magnitude, because they realize the financial impact really wasn't there. And if it does come to an appeal and Google actually does lay out their books and say, this is how much we made from it, they could make a good argument to say, this is nowhere nearer a monopoly. We may have better placement, but people are still buying from all the ads that we place down below. But does that absolve them? If they say, Our strategy didn't work, does that mean that it wasn't a monopoly?
I think, by definition, if it didn't work, it's not a monopoly. But this is just the beginning. The Android probe could potentially be much, much bigger, which alleges that they prioritize their own services on Android phones over competitors, with the result of consumer harm, which is something that they'll need to prove. But Android is... become a significant revenue driver for Google, and it's just a massive product that the world uses.
Well, that's going to be the part of their argument, and you can't win, because Google's strategy was to give away an operating system to beat Apple, and then now by giving, they're basically being accused of dumping. They're not. They're giving us something for free. Isn't that nice? Europe is behind.
The economic harm part is always the most difficult piece to prove, because if your laws haven't caught up to the fact that we're making money by giving things away, that little tidbit is almost impossible to prove, especially through a court of appeals. Owen, what do you think? Is Google in the wrong here? Did they do a bad thing, or is this the EU overreacting?
The EU has got a lot of issues, and getting some free money would help those issues. So that's why the fine is only $2.7 billion, because no matter what happens, you can appeal. They're going to settle out of court for $1.2 billion and go on about their day and say, we're never going to do it again because we ain't make no money from it in the first place. The EU says, cool story, bro. Let's go get private jets next week. So, I mean, it's neither here nor there as far as I'm concerned. It's just legalese, people out there trying to get a free check, because it's wrong, yes. But they're not very good at it. And, Mark, I wasn't even going to say anything because you said exactly what I want to say. Their experience sucks now. So, I mean, shame on them for even trying it, because it's just a horrible experience, which makes me care not for the whole issue.
Let me ask the panel, does anybody here actually buy stuff from a Google search? Because I start with Amazon. I type it in Amazon. Yeah. That's where I go.
If Amazon doesn't have it, Walmart does.
Yeah. I can't remember the last time I actually bought something because Google had it in its little as an ad or in the Google shopping platform.
Yeah, I mean, I'll Google around to try to compare prices on more expensive items.
And then I'll go back to Amazon because I can get it the next day.
I'm all over the wire cutter, though. Trust them immensely.
And you know, that's a really interesting business now too, because wire cutter. I've brought together some people in commerce and media in New York. And Perch, do you know Perch? P-U-R-C-H, mm-hmm. Right? They do great, very focused things. Gizmodo Media, formerly known as Gawker, Business Insider, New York Magazine, they're all going to commerce. And commerce is interesting because what they said, these editorial people said, is you have to have trust there. If you're Gizmodo and you say you're going to have the best bargain out there, you don't find the best bargain, you give people stuff you're going to make more money on, people won't come to you. So the idea of the kind of clickbait media model we were in, commerce actually might help us a little bit.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, how about a Google story that is going to make everyone a little uncomfortable, and that's the fact that Google is again being sued by its employees, this time for pay discrimination against women. Three women have sued Google for discriminating against female employees. Specifically, the suit hinges around so-called career tracks. Kelly Ellis, Holly Pierce, and Kelly Wisuri say that they were placed into lower-tier tracks than they were eligible for. Ellis was put in a level 3 track, that's where beginners start, and she was put on front-end development. Now, the suit claims that in her case, there was a male colleague with the exact same amount of experience who was put in level 4, which puts him on the back-end team. And the back-end team is a much more prestigious spot. It has it gets much more pay, and it has more opportunities for advancement. And it's almost exclusively male. Wisuri was hired into level tool sales, while a similar male candidate got level 3, which also gave him commission. Pierce had 10 years of experience going in, but was listed as managerial instead of technical, which limited her opportunities for advancement. Since she was not a technical team, all of the people that she was in charge of eventually passed her. Now, this is always very, very iffy because, of course, we don't have any of the details, really, other than what it says in the lawsuit and other than the very limited information coming out of Google. But right now, the attorney for the three women, James Feinberg, is trying to win class action status, which would cover all women at Google for the past 4 years. And of course, whenever you're dealing with a class action, you're assuming that once it starts, the complaints are going to come flooding in because that's the only way that this is going to work. Is this something that's actually going to work? Will this achieve class action status? Will you see sort of a stampede of women at Google saying, yeah, that's happening to me as well? Or is this an edge case?
Well, it's definitely not an edge case. If there is indeed pay discrimination and, right, and big pay discrepancies, that's a national and global problem. So I think if they were indeed discriminating against women, then good. The women should be able to get class action status and get that corrected.
Right. Now, those of us in the Valley who have friends who work for Google and other tech giants, I'll say this is not the first time I've heard this. I've heard this a lot. And this is actually a way to get away around some of the reporting information that Google has been doing to the Department of Labor, because you can say, well, we placed this person in a higher end job. That's what suited him or her. And so then you say, well, there's no pay discrimination because it's a different position. What these women are saying is, wait a minute, we were placed in the wrong tracks. We were deliberately placed in the wrong tracks. They knew we were in the wrong tracks, and they let us stay there because it would allow them to advance the men above us without it looking like it's blatant a sexism.
Owen?
A big sigh.
As much as I love California for being like better than like most of the rest of the country, that pocket that is San Francisco and is Silicon Valley is messed up. It is run by mostly white males, and the systems that are put into place benefit those males first, and males in general, and people of color and women have tons of issues that are bigger and smaller than money. And the bottom line is, I don't know for sure that there was discrimination, but I like the fact that there's a class action suit afoot so we can find out. And if the pattern and the system seems to be laid out and in corresponding to make sure that these women could not advance in the way that they should, Google should be sued. Facebook, any other large company with massive amounts of employees that might be doing something similar, something different, should also be looked at because at some point it's got to stop. And in that place in particular, there is so much money being thrown around and everybody pretends like they're better than they are, and they're not. Just because these companies rule the world, look like they're ruling the world, try startups here and there, the problem again is the core process of these white males not funding women founders. Like, from top to bottom, it's an issue. So I will never side with a Google or anybody else over women or minorities. And I love white men too. Y'all my bros all on the panel. But I mean, just in general, I got to side with everybody else first, especially in Silicon Valley, because at some point it needs to get turned on this end and it has to stop, because Silicon Valley has this air of arrogance that it's better than everybody, that they're doing something special. And when it comes down to it, same systemic problems are boring out in the valley, and it's disgusting because everyone there acts like they're better when they're not. And more men should stick behind these women and support them so that it's not just women in their class action suit, because some men are good men and know better, so they need to work with them on that.
Glad we finally had an all-male panel attack this very important gender issue.
Exactly. Hey, I watch Twitter a lot of times, and there's minority stuff, and it's just a whole bunch of white guys. And sometimes the white guy says the right thing. That's all that matters. As long as somebody cares and is willing to help and do the right thing, that's what helps change. Because, again, women can't just be out there doing it on their own, because they need their male counterparts to support them as well.
Yeah, this is a super sensitive topic, just because there's no real way to win it. I mean, you could present all the data, you could present all the anecdotal evidence that you have, but at some point people just have to say, gosh, I could see it on both sides. I think there's actually something deeper, though, than just Silicon Valley. There is, I don't know if it's an American thing, I don't know if it's a technology world thing, but there's such a hesitancy to talk about our salaries. We don't do it. That's not polite conversation. And you can't really talk about pay equality unless you're willing to talk about your pay.
But again, it's not just the pay for the same job. That's been the right discussion in the past. What this says is, yeah, you're putting me in a different rank, so it's not the same job, and you can justify the pay. Listen, I agree with everything Owen said, and he said it better than I could have, but there's clearly a problem across this country, didn't this election show us, with understanding diversity. And there's clearly a problem in Silicon Valley with diversity. And Silicon Valley actually knows it. They just haven't figured out what to do about it, I think. And being forced into this position will probably in the end be a good thing, because the more diversity there is at every rank of the company, the better the products and services are going to be, the more they're going to be serving larger markets. And it's good business. It's like, don't be evil, be good. This is part of being good.
And that's, for the longest time, that's been the idea, that we ask you to be socially responsible because it's good business. Yep. You hire the right people and you treat them right and you get better people. You act properly when you sell products and you'll get a better, more loyal customer base. Unfortunately, I don't know if that always plays out properly. It's not. You know, a lot of companies that don't play by the rules, that aren't being fair, that aren't being ethical, will get ahead. They will get a leg up. And so the other companies will say, hey, well, why should we follow the rules if they're not?
Well, you can be Uber for a while.
Yes.
But not forever.
Yes. Actually, I love that. That should be the show title. You can be Uber for a while. All right.
Can we,
I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead.
No, please.
What's your next story? Where were you looking at? I'm looking at this list and it's not where I wanted to go.
Oh. What do you want?
How did you know?
What do you want?
Oh, I'm always in the notes. I know about the ads. I know about the money. But we out here doing it. But I want to get to these the two ex-Googlers.
Oh, yes. The bodega.
We're killing the time right now. We're flowing. So I want to make sure I get that in before we jump to those other stories. We can jump into an ad too now if you like.
Well, no. Owen, take us to Bodega Town, because this burned down the internet for a couple of days.
Yeah, it did.
Of course, we're talking about the two ex-Googlers who decided that they are going to innovate by removing all your bodegas. Now, if you don't live in an area that has a lot of bodegas, and maybe you don't understand the story, but think of it as a lifeline. It is the place where you can go down to the corner and get anything you need from
You can get your egg and cheese on a roll.
Exactly. And these Googlers say, you know what would make that bodega experience even better? This experience of reaching out to your neighbor and seeing people and interacting. What if we made it completely impersonal by replacing them with robots? That my friends, are the bodegas. Now, Owen, obviously you have some strong sentiments on this.
Okay, so first of all, again, two white guys, ex-Googlers. It's always cool when you get to put ex-Googler in front of something that's supposed to make me think that you're the smartest person in the world. I mean, hundreds of thousands of people have come and gone through Google, but Lord knows these ex-Googlers and their startups. I mean, let's just heaven to Betsy turn over the world for them. Second of all, so you take a vending machine and tell the world that you're going to kill mom and pop shops and bodegas. And then you call your company, but you're going to get free money right now. Bodega, if y'all are listening, call me. Don't call me. Just listen. It's free. So you're going to call your company Bodega instead of calling it vendor and spell it weird like every other normal tech person in Silicon Valley would have. You call it Bodega. So you, I mean,
do you know what else? What also when the mascot? You saw that?
Yeah.
The bodega cat. Yeah.
Listen, if you put a bodega vending machine in New York City, you would literally have a fight on your hand. Someone would take that thing off of a truck, and then some guy named Julio and Juan would beat you up and make you put it back on the truck because you're messing with the family business. Secondly, if you were smart, besides not calling it bodega and using appropriation and just stealing and then lying and telling the people that you had someone do a survey, whatever company that you had do a survey for you, you should sue them because they lied to you. And I don't think you had a company do a survey in the first place. But literally, if you just would have said, hey, we know that people are busy and their companies and stuff like that, so we want to bring the bodega experience to their company. Because, you know, when I leave Facebook at night and I got to go home and do the laundry for my kids, it'd be nice if I could go to a vending machine and get some Tide detergent out instead of going to the local grocery store. And I'm just trying to help out people like that. Or better yet, I'm going to put it outside a mom and pop shop that maybe doesn't do 24 hours and work with them. Because, you know, we're going to have logistic problems putting all this stuff in a vending machine. So maybe we can help the mom and pop shop instead of we're going to kill them and destroy them and take them out into the backyard. Like, who are these people and who gives these people money for these stupid ideas? And then you spend all this money on PR, and oh boy, did you get your PR. Because I'm thinking, wait, this is like a Postmates that I can steal? Because Postmates comes and brings me what I want when I just make a phone call or do on my app. They just bring it to me. But you're going to put a box that I'm supposed to just not rob it through glass? And then how do you fill it? Like, what are you doing? Who are these people? Ex-Googlers. My fault. I apologize.
There's a reason they're
we need to take a pause for a cigarette break.
Dude, my brain hurts so bad. Stuff like this is so stupid. I'm about to start a company that says, run it by us. And just be like, look, just call me and just give me your pitch. You know what I mean? I'll charge you like $5,000. I give you an hour and tell you what's wrong. Maybe I'll call a black friend, a Latina friend, a gay friend, somebody outside of your bubble, because these people are just, for being so smart, they're so dumb. So dumb. And then they surround themselves with yes men in that valley. I don't know what water's going on up in there, but there's some water problems. There's something in that water out there in San Francisco, because it's bro country, bro.
Well, every building you're going out here says that it's built on toxic waste.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah.
It's killing everybody's brain. The smartest dumb people in the world out there sometimes. Woo! Bro, Dick.
I think the most interesting thing about that story was the fact that those two ex-Googlers, they were really caught by surprise at the backlash. They did not expect
that. As were
that.
The investors.
And yeah. They were like, oh, so you don't want us to kill the stores that you've had for 100 years? Oh.
The dude from Capital, whatever finance, going out there tweeting, we've got a van, we got a bodega in our office. Everybody loves it. Cool. They love getting toilet paper from the glass machine on their way out the door. Of course they do, because you gave them money, you doofus. And then you're going to go on Twitter and tweet that dumb stuff. Like I said, I wish they would take one of these bodegas to New York City. Woo! I'd pay money to sit front row to watch it come off a truck.
So here's a question for you. Here's a question. It goes to what you said. If they had just called it Vending 2.0 without an E, right? If they just said, you know that vending machine you have to kick because the thing gets stuck in it? We're going to make a better vending machine. It's just going to be on shelves. You're going to take it out and it's going to be okay. And in your office vending machine will now be this. Would that have been they could have maybe had a business there.
Dollars to donuts, that's how you make money. You put it in high-end offices or high-end apartments, hotels that don't have a kind of vending machine, and then that would have made you money.
Yeah.
That would have gave you some footing to start to grow the business. Because right now, like I said, take that thing off a truck and see if y'all last. That company is...
And in New York, you know, what's already dead is the office newsstand. Every big building used to have a newsstand where you go down, you get a Snapple, and you could look at the magazines and not buy them, and all that, and they are dead. There is no such thing in New York anymore, nothing. And so if you want to go out and get your Doritos, you got to go and you're in the office. You're not in a neighborhood where there's a bodega who knows the residents. If you're in a horrible office park, there's nowhere you can go. They could have had a business here. I think it's still, you're right. It's dumb to say there's this thing with glass and shelves and surely it's not going to work and people are going to figure out how to rip it off. But that's their problem.
Exactly.
I'm down. That,
I don't know. This made me so
bodega,
mad.
If you're listening, you may want to contract with Owen J.J. Stone because he's got a way for you to pivot your business to something that's not going to outrage the internet.
Or at least save yourself from making a bloody fool of yourself.
There you go. There you go. Now, when we come back, I would actually like to go a little bit over this interesting story forming in the heartland of America that centers around jobs, technologies, factories, and Amazon. Can we do that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll do that. But first, let's take another break and toss over to Uncle Leo, who has these words from a sponsor of Twit.
Yes, I'm back to interrupt. Sorry, but I got to, as they say, and now a word from our sponsor. I don't know how many of you have installed the Ring Video doorbell yet. It's wonderful. It's awesome. I love my Ring Video doorbell. It's funny because now as I walk around my neighborhood, I see more and more of them. And maybe that's because of Ring's Neighborhoods program, where you can effectively use your Ring Video doorbell. That's the doorbell that's got a camera, speaker, microphone, motion sensors, connects to the internet, lets you know wherever you are, who's at your door, who's walking by. Because of that, you get a few of those in your neighborhood. You've got a neighborhood watch, a digital neighborhood watch. And you can actually, with your permission, you can give others access to your camera and you can see what's going on. You can protect your neighborhood as well as your own home. Ring is just, they did this, by the way, in Wilshire Park, which is a suburb of LA. And it was interesting because they only gave out, they gave 1 in 10 houses a Ring Video doorbell. They didn't give everybody one, just 10%. But they saw a reduction in crime over 6 months of more than 50%. And I have to think it's just, you know, thieves know. Well, we can't go to that neighborhood. They've got video doorbells everywhere. You're going to love it. Easy to install. There are a variety of Ring Video doorbells depending on your needs. One has a battery, so you don't even have to have a wired doorbell. You could put it on a front gate, put it on a guest house. If you have an Airbnb or you rent your stuff out, what a great way to keep an eye on your Airbnb. And, of course, it integrates with all of your favorite smart locks and hubs and so forth and monitoring and security. And even I can use it with my Amazon Echo. I can say, Echo, show me my front door anywhere in the world. I'm on it right now. As we do this, I'm on a riverboat in France. I can actually take out my phone and see who's at my front door. I can answer it. I can say, yeah, I'm in the bath right now. Please leave that package. I can keep an eye on the package, too. Home security begins at the front door, but it doesn't end there. That's why they've extended their product line to include the Ring floodlight camera. When somebody walks down behind your house, the lights come on. You get a notification. You see the movement. You can look at the camera. You can talk to them. Hey, what are you doing there? Believe me, that scares the pants off a bad guy. Or deer. It works with deer, too. Hey, deer, get away from my bushes. And you can hear them. And if it does not scare them, you can push a button on your phone. I don't care if you're in France or anywhere in the world. You push a button on your phone and a 110 decibel alarm goes off. And believe me, even deer, that'll scare the heck out of them. They're gone. Wall Street Journal's Best of CES this year, 2017. The Ring Video Doorbell, the Ring Floodlight Cam. We've actually got a great deal for you. Up to $150 off on a Ring of Security kit when you go to ring.com/twit. R-I-N-G, ring, ding dong, ring, ring.com/twit. I use it. I love it. I bet you many of the panelists use it. Jamie Siminoff? This guy is such a great guy. I love him. He was, maybe you saw him on Shark Tank with the previous product. When he came up with Ring, it clicked. It clicked. And it is now, I'm sure of it, the best-selling home security device out there. It is the king of IoT devices. Ring.com/twit. Try it today.
Thanks, Leo. All right. Let's go ahead and take a trip over to Cheeseland. I've actually lived in this state, Wisconsin. Wisconsin, 3 days ago, in a 64-31 vote, approved an incentive package to lure Foxconn into the state. Of course, Foxconn is the famous manufacturer of so many of your favorite pieces of gear, from phones to networking units. Now, they will be investing $10 billion to build a factory. And for that investment, over the course of 15 years, Foxconn will get $2.85 billion in tax incentives from the state of Wisconsin. Now, the factory will build everything from TVs, again, to networking devices. It will initially employ 3,000 workers who are expected to make about $54,000 a year plus benefits. It could potentially employ up to 13,000 workers in the future. The finances are a little interesting. This is where the story kind of goes south. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau, it's a nonpartisan financial watchdog. They calculated that assuming that Foxconn hires all 13,000, not 3,000, but 13,000 workers, and assuming that you have an additional 22,000 jobs created by suppliers wanting to come into the area, that in that best case scenario, you will start to get a return on the investment in 25 years. So that part doesn't sound super, super great. And people are jumping on that. However, I think this is actually part of a much bigger bet. This is not just a gamble on Foxconn. Wisconsin wants this to be the new Silicon Valley. In fact, at
who doesn't want to be the new Silicon Valley?
Right, because it's money. But at the announcement, when they announced this vote and that the bill was going to be signed, they specifically called out Amazon. And they said, we're going to be the new destination for tech. Amazon and their 50,000 jobs would be more than welcome, and we'll give them a premium place in the new Silicon Valley.
They already gave away their tax break. Amazon's not going to go there if they don't get $5 billion.
Yeah. Yeah, right, right. And this is, we've actually seen this a lot. We saw a new Silicon Valley in New York. We saw a new Silicon Valley in Illinois. We saw one in Israel. We saw one in India. We saw one in London, Berlin.
London.
Everyone's trying to recreate the Silicon Valley, and they all have the same strategy, which is we'll give you a lot of tax breaks so that you come in and then you'll stay. It's not how it works. They come in, then the tax breaks stop, and then they leave because someone else is willing to give them a bigger tax break.
But which also means that within the nation, we're competing with each other.
Right. Of course. Of course. Because we all want it in our state. But my question to you is this a bet? Is this actually a bet, or is this destined to fail?
The latter. I think aren't these always destined to fail?
I really want this to work. I mean, it's kind of bold. Again, they know it doesn't make financial sense. To get an ROI in 25 years, you're basically writing it off. So they need other businesses to come in. I just don't see that
actually
happening. I guess
that's the bet, but how can they really make themselves cool? Yeah. It's Wisconsin. Love it. Love it. Cheese is great.
No, again. No. The short story, sure, you gave somebody a couple jobs. First thing is the weather. You're never going to be Silicon Valley. End of story. The weather. Second of all, just to get the return of 25 years, they'll be gone before that 25 years even came back around. And whenever I hear possibility of up to 3,000 jobs, this is one of the core things that I dislike about America. Rich people who are ungodly rich, pardon using the word, but are just so rich they can afford to do anything, still want and demand things to be free. The fact that we as taxpayers allow football owners to come in and have the taxpayers pay for their stadiums. Amen. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, so as a taxpayer, when do I get my free ticket? I feel like if you come and add the taxpayers pay every single man, woman, and child in that region to get a ticket to one game, I don't care if it takes you 20 years to get them to one game, they should be able to take their family and go to a game because they're the ones paying for it on their backs. So to get Amazon or Foxconn or Ramacon to come here, I got to give you $3 billion, take money out of people's pockets in Wisconsin who the 3,000 people already not having a job, imaginary 13,000 people still don't have a job, and you're pre-taking away money from people that might never get that money back. But that's the way the system works because we have lobbyists and corrupt politicians and the way the world works and technology. So no, sir, sadly for you, the dream of this working only works for the rich because that's the way the cookie crumbles. The game is rigged, and I can't stand it.
Now, I'm absolutely with you on this being put onto the backs of the people who really can't afford this kind of a tax incentive. However, I'm not willing to go as far as saying it's corrupt. It looks corrupt. Well, it looks stupid. But, I mean, if you've ever lived in Wisconsin, that state's hurting. I mean, there's a reason why we've got an outswell of very strange conversations, and this is part of it. When you have people who are so far down, this sounds like, okay, well, we have to do something.
So, again, so you also want to treat it, though, from the demand
side.
Short
term, yeah.
Not just from let's give them a tax break and force them to come in here. If instead you really changed your schools, right, and you had tremendous talent base there and people wanted to go in there, then that would make a difference. You know, the other stories in the rundown that is Amazon, of course, is looking for its next HQ2.
Yeah.
And every city is now talking about this. I'm going to make a pitch right now because I live near it. I want this to go to Newark, New Jersey. And here's why. Audible is already headquartered there. Audible knows the city. It's next to an airport. It's next to the center of the universe, otherwise known as New York, New York. It's next to a lot of things, but it could make a difference. It could make a huge difference in that city as it starts to come up, and it needs business, and 50,000 jobs can make a big difference. So the part of the question is, does Amazon go to just where they get the best deal or where they could make the most difference?
Well, if they're responsible, then they go to where they can make the biggest difference.
Because it's going to have a value in the long run. But I don't know where it's going to go.
Didn't Mark Zuckerberg give an imaginary $100 billion to, like, Newark?
Oh, yeah. No, it was, the money wasn't imaginary, but the benefit, unfortunately, was.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I live in Jersey, and I just remembered it not doing anything. But they ended up on Oprah, and Cory Booker became a national name, and all the hoop. Again, it's just don't ask me these questions. Because it's all just so much fluff and crap, yep. And when you actually look at it and you know what's going on, it's ridiculous. I'm like, man, I would love to be on the social media team one day when Cory Booker tries to run for something because Mark Zuckerberg came down, had a HUD up a check, and said stock up to whatever, and then they got a couple books, and I've been through Newark, and Newark is still not a cool place to be. Good luck on you, Audible. Imaginary Amazon. Amazon ain't going to Newark because they can't supply their employees with enough vests to protect themselves, so...
Yeah, no, there is another development in the story, which is if you look at the actual contract, you look at the numbers, Foxconn will get the full tax incentive in 15 years. The ROI doesn't hit until 25. So can you guess what's going to happen in 15 years? It's probably, and they're looking at this going, Foxconn is right now doing a lot of investment into robotics.
Let's even say if Foxconn says, no, we're going to stick around as long as we're here.
Yeah.
The stuff they make could all disappear. We get implanted biochips, and Foxconn is out of business.
Yeah, yeah. And there's also the fact that there's a reason why a lot of factories are moving out of the United States. We don't like them.
Yeah.
Factories destroy the community in which you live. Why do you think that we moved from everything was made in Taiwan, then everything was made in India, now everything is made in China? And even then, they're starting to say, this is not worth the ecological disaster that we are facing. At some point, the pain becomes so much that you say, we're willing to outsource this. We're willing to lose 3,000 jobs if it means that our state doesn't turn into a toxic waste dump.
Oh, humanity.
Show title.
If we really wanted to do something that was, this is not social justice warrior, but if we wanted to do something to wake people up, we would go to a city like Los Angeles and say, hey, you guys buy a lot of iPhones. We're putting an iPhone factory in Los Angeles. But we don't see that. It's always one removed. It's not in my backyard. I get this wonderful device and all the bad stuff goes to another part of the world, or in this particular case, another part of the country. I don't see that changing anytime in the near future.
And by all accounts, Foxconn is not exactly a great place to work, by the way.
No. But I mean, $54,000 plus benefits, that's tempting to a lot of
people. When
you're hurting, yes, yeah, it sounds great. Yeah. It does. But
even
again,
though the chance that you're one of the 3,000 that's going to get that $54,000
job, that's line, not great. That 2 mile line long line to get the jobs, yeah.
Foxconn.
Great name.
Con.
All right, let's move a little bit to something fun and theoretical.
Ooh.
Cryptocurrency. We all love bitcoins, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Oh, wow, we've got Bitcoin. Yeah. Wait, Jemmer B, you actually have a Bitcoin, or you have one. I also have one Bitcoin, so I was worth $5,000 12 days ago, and then I was worth $2,900 yesterday.
Whoa.
And now I think I'm up to $3,700 today. So it fluctuates a lot. We've known this. Yep. Bitcoin is pretty volatile. In fact, it's that volatility that makes it an interesting investment for a lot of people. But recently, there's been a very strong downward tug on the blockchain because China has decided they're not going to have exchanges anymore. They will just not allow it. Their thinking is that they have startups that are using cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin, to fund their ventures. And the highly speculative nature of this means that if they have enough of those businesses, that a bad day of Bitcoin could wipe out an entire sector. And they've said no more. So as of the end of September,
they don't allow them. All Bitcoin exchanges will shut down.
Or wipe out a lot of people's fortunes. China has had a problem with this for a long time where there is this this sort of cult of the IPO, because there was an era in China where you buy shares in an IPO and you suddenly have like a lot more money. And so like very uneducated people, the middle class, were like spending money on IPOs, and then that whole market kind of like collapsed upon itself, and a lot of people lost money. And ICOs are starting to look similar. Yeah. You put money into it, it's like, wow, all these other people are putting money into it. It is a huge fortune.
So many of them look so sketch. I've received announcements for ICOs probably at least one or two per week for the last 2 months. And they all have the same pitch, the next big thing in cryptocurrency. And we've got this person and this piece of talent. And they don't explain why they're going to be the new cryptocurrency standard. They just all assume that, oh, yeah, you're going to think this is Bitcoin, therefore you'll buy in.
This is going to sound off topic, but I promise it's not. I'm watching this amazing series right now on Amazon, Trapped, that is Icelandic. That is to say, the language is Icelandic, right? And it's a large cast. I figure it's about 10% of the entire population of Iceland is in the show. But the great scene I just watched today is there's somebody coming in. They're going to put a harbor in here. We got to get ready to buy. Da, 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 da. Chinese. America's over, they say. China's where it's at. And there's one old fisherman coot there that says, we went through this already. Didn't we learn? And there's the crash in Iceland, right? Mm-hmm. And the crash that hit this country. And we never learned. We never learned.
Well, China just had this. They just got over a major real estate crash. They had all of these apartments and office buildings that were going up because they assumed that you were going to continue growing at this incredible pace. It was a speculative market, and it just destroyed wealth. Hundreds of billions of dollars of wealth wiped out literally overnight in some cases. So they're doing it again. Yeah. It's the exact same thing. You're going to make a lot of millionaires and billionaires, and then you're going to break a lot of millionaires and billionaires. In this particular case, though, China is saying, unlike the real estate crash where there was something left, there was a corpse you could pick over, when you have a cryptocurrency crash, there's nothing. It's just gone. It's into the ether.
Yeah. The other side of it is China has a relatively controlled currency.
Yes.
And Bitcoin allows people to exchange money in a way that's not always apparent to the government where it's going. And so Bitcoin has obviously had a lot of money laundering claims thrown at it for a while. But within China, it's also people can just use it to buy other currencies that they otherwise wouldn't be able to buy into.
That's what surprised me about Bitcoin being allowed in and the exchanges being allowed in the first place. I thought China would be one of the last places that would allow it because of that. You can't control your currency. If you have this wild card currency running rampant in, you know, not even in the back alleys, in the streets, in your vision of Wall Street, we've seen $60 million of cryptocurrency wealth wiped out in the last week because of the fluctuation. We know that China has one of the largest Bitcoin exchanges right now, but their volume has been decreasing since January because that's when China mandated fees. It used to be it was free to exchange Bitcoin for other currencies in China. They mandated a fee to bring it on par with the rest of the world. So it's down to about 10%. A lot of the Bitcoin aficionados are saying it's not that much. The exchanges will pick up elsewhere, which I'm sure they will. But do you see this? Let's get speculative right now. Do you see this action being repeated across multiple countries as they start to look at this, at China specifically, and their answer to stopping a speculative market that could destroy their economy? Is this going to be repeated again and again and again?
I don't know that you can.
China is China.
Yeah.
And other countries are not China. So just think of it this way. China has a mom and dad, and they control your piggy bank, and they control how much TV you watch. They control how much internet you watch. They control what you learn. America has an infant leader who says, do what you like, have fun, burn it all down, build it all up, whatever. And the rest of the world kind of goes on that model. So, no, I don't see it going that way. But, again, with all the Bitcoin stuff, you know, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. I forget. Bush couldn't do it.
What did President Bush say? Yeah.
Fool me once, shame on you. Yeah. Fool me twice.
Yeah.
I can't just be fooled again.
I can't remember what he says. But, yeah, China's one of the only countries that could do this. Everybody else is not going to follow China's lead with this. I don't see how they could.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the U.S. is going to ban Bitcoin.
No, definitely not the U.S.
But the SEC has talked about ICOs in particular and has warned about, you know, potential pump and dump schemes and
well, there's
deception.
No regulation whatsoever. They're not considered
old
financial
folks
institutions.
Are gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
This is Florida.
So I could see the SEC more closely scrutinizing ICOs and shutting down some of those businesses.
I had a relative who lives in Florida and is retired contact me about an ICO that she thinks might be a good investment. And I was like, no, stop. But so-and-so down the road, they invested and they tripled their money in 24 hours. Like, okay, but
wow.
Think it through.
Go look up Ponzi.
Exactly.
I mean, the thing is, that same story happens with real estate from Uncle Johnny.
Exactly.
Buying a car from Willie down the block. Like, I mean, it's cool that it's Bitcoin and it's like imaginary money. Let's just also remember that also. Like, when a person puts in their money, yes, it's real money. But there's also a lot of, I was rich yesterday. Well, you only put in $100. But it was up to you never had $3,000, bro. Like, if you thought you had $3,000, you should have cashed out instead of trying to live this dream that you thought was going to happen. So there's always scammers. There's always scams. This is just another form of it. And hey, maybe you get rich and go live the dream like Uncle Leo on a yacht somewhere in France. I don't know.
When we come back, I do want to cover just a tiny bit more. Did you know that you could automatically sue to potentially get $25,000? We're going to bring you all the Equifax news because we got to do it.
Sounds like an ICO-style scam.
It is an ICO-style scam. We got an ultimate Ponzi scheme, but it's actually a real deal. We'll get to that. But first, if you haven't been watching Twit this last week, this is what you missed.
Previously on Twit.
Remember when I started to install Windows 10S on this computer? Yeah, all it'll do now is that.
Okay. I gotta go. Bye. No, I would...
Know-how.
Today on Know-How...
Protecting your credit.
And getting smarter with your finances.
Today, what we wanted to do is to give people actual, actionable information that they could take and they could use to protect themselves.
The new screensavers.
We talked about preparing for disaster.
This is a tool.
It's a tool.
Just like a rock.
I thought what we could possibly do is go through some of our go bags and some of our philosophies of putting together disaster preparedness kits. And the whole idea is, I need something that can keep me alive. You've told me that I shouldn't be carrying this. I've always included a pry bar, a crowbar, in every bug out bag.
Just make sure you're not going to end up in prison because... Yeah, actually, crowbars are really effective in self-defense.
Twit. Don't make me come back there.
I have to say that episode with Patrick Norton was a lot of fun, but also... That MRE tasted a lot better than I thought it would.
So what did you have?
I had Mexican stew? Chicken stew-ish stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was ridiculously salty because it has to be. But it lasts up to 6 years in storage. That's not bad. Right? I mean,
you're going to become a disaster guy, you know?
Oh, a prepper?
Yeah, prepper.
I'm not a prepper, but I do like to have at least a bug out bag. Owen, do you have a bug out bag?
Earthquake territory. He's bugging out.
Oh, he's bugging out. we were just wondering if you had a bug out bag, Owen.
I do have a bug out bag.
What's in it? Is it like a 3-day supply to get out of the country, or is it just to get back to your house?
I'm running to the bathroom real quick too. But the coolest thing that I have in a bug out bag is Newport cigarettes, two cases. Vacuum sealed. I swap them out every 6 months.
Is that your Bitcoin?
Oh, definitely. You know what people do for a cigarette? The apocalypse comes, brother. I can get a lot of stuff for a pack of smokes. You have no idea. Be right back.
There we go. Okay. It's a whole new business. Bitcoin you can smoke.
Oh, my
Bitcoin
goodness.
You get addicted to. Yeah. Oh,
on that note, let's go ahead and jump to one more sponsor of this episode of Twit.
Man, this show goes fast. Sorry to interrupt one more time, but I got to tell you about WordPress. That's where my blog is. In fact, if you want to see pictures of my trip, I'm blogging it, or I will be. I probably haven't got anything up yet. I'm a little slow. At leolaporte.com. I'm so glad to be back on WordPress. I know I flirted with some other guys for a while, but I've been using a WordPress site since the early 2000s. I self-hosted it for a while, ran it myself, but I'm on WordPress.com, and I love it because I don't spend any time updating it, making patches. I get all the plugins I want. And I've got a great site with that easy-to-use WordPress interface. Because WordPress runs 28% of all the sites in the world, 28%, more than a quarter of every site you go to is a WordPress site, WordPress.com/twit. Set up your site. If you have a business and you don't have a website, it's like you don't exist. I'm not kidding. You may say, well, no, but I'm on Facebook or I have a Twitter handle. Yeah, good. You should have that. But at any time, Facebook, turn it off like that. Twitter could turn it off like that. You need to have a place that's yours, that you call your own, that you control. And that's going to be at WordPress.com. Put your content up there. Engage your customers. When they find you, when they see your ad or whatever, they have somewhere to go. You put an ad in the yellow pages, you put a billboard up, you're going to want to put a web link, not see our Facebook page. You're going to want to put yourbusiness.com. You can do it at WordPress.com. And I know you don't do that right now because you don't want to be a web, you know, you don't want to learn all that. You don't have to learn anything. It's easy. Take my word for it. Go to WordPress.com/twit and try it. You get 15% off a brand new website if you use that URL, WordPress.com/twit. The business plan lets you access hundreds of plugins and themes. You're part of a giant community at WordPress.com, plus the best support ever. I mean, these people will jump through hoops for you. And I know because they've done it for me. WordPress.com/twit. The web's most popular and powerful site-building platform. It's the best. I don't even want to use that phrase, site-building platform. It's your new home on the internet. Try it. WordPress.com/twit. And now back to This Week in Tech.
Thanks again, Leo. Now, let's go ahead and bring it home with, I think we can all agree, is the feel-good story of the week, and that is Equifax's incompetence is coming out even more. We know last week that 143 million, basically 50% of all adults in the United States, had their super sensitive information revealed. That includes Social Security's names, addresses, ages, driver's license numbers, credit history. That was all exposed, all breached. We've also known that Equifax has been a little hesitant in releasing details as to how it actually happened. A lot of analysts were saying,
"Hey, I'm their admin."
You're right, exactly. but what's coming out this week is it is worst case. It's what the security researchers had feared, that this wasn't a zero-day hack. This wasn't someone being very ingenious in social engineering their way into the system. This was they didn't patch vulnerabilities in struts, and they left admin privileges at default. There was one web-facing server that had the admin username of admin and the admin password of admin, which, you know, is absolutely fantastic.
How did they guess?
And how?
Evil geniuses.
That's what I have on my luggage. But
there is kind of a reverse psychology there, though. We'll have great security if we have the dumbest possible password. Yeah. They'll never guess
They're
that.
They're brute forcing every other option.
Everything else, because they surely couldn't have used admin.
They wouldn't be so stupid as to use the default password. I'm just going to skip that, right? That's what they were thinking. Now there is a wrinkle that I actually covered this week on This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's the fact that the people that they hired to do security at Equifax, who have, for no related reason, have decided to spend more time with their families, which which is code for, fired.
Those are the same people who sold their stock?
No. These are different people. But they were in charge of security. They were in charge of making sure that the data was maintained properly. And
the
we now know they had...
chief security officer.
They had no security background whatsoever, which is not super rare. You see that a lot. But you at least see people who have backgrounds in which they have practical experience in security. This was one of these things where one was, an art appreciation major.
You got to do something with all those people.
This is raising more questions than it's answering. It looks as if Equifax really thought security was just not something they had to worry about. You've covered a little bit of this story, Mark.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we broke news on the stock sales for those three executives. It's a total mess. It also came out this week that as many as 400,000 people in the UK were also affected.
They haven't released the data on Canadian citizens yet, although we know that Canadian citizens were included in the breach. Not the same number, but yes, there's that. I think this is what's really bothering the security community, in that first, it was 6 weeks before they revealed that this breach had occurred. Secondly, you had executives who had been selling stock during that time. Third, they had obviously not done even the most minimum bit of security preparedness definitely not pen testing. And also the fact that it looks as if Equifax's whole culture was based around this idea of if we don't think about it, it just won't happen. And that's enraged a lot of people.
Yeah, I think one of the most frustrating things about this is that unlike the Sony hack where like, yeah, I love my PlayStation. I had gave up my information and now it's come out. Like, I didn't choose to use Equifax. I don't love Equifax. I didn't want to give them my social security number and all of my private information. But, you know, the system holds us hostage to these companies, and clearly they're not even doing their one job, which is to protect the sensitive data that they hold.
But I think at this point, I tried to have this discussion with Leo and got nowhere in Twink, so I'll try it again. he was thinking about vacation. He was already out of there. Is that all this information, if it hasn't already been breached, is going to be breached.
Right.
So what we have to change now is not the security around the data that'll be breached. It's instead around what could be done with it. So transactions have to become more secure. We've got to figure out that end of it so that who cares if you have somebody's name and address and birth date and that stuff. Apart from stupid people and passwords, admin, that'll never go away. But at some level, we've got to rethink the whole notion of transactions.
I think there's only one solution. There's only one solution. I'll get to you next, Owen. The one solution is to use the facial recognition feature on the new iPhone. It's the only way to protect our financial transactions. There you have it, Owen.
Mark said everything I wanted to say in a much calmer tone. I've been yelling the whole episode. And, you know, just to let people know, to be honest, like, I could give a hoot and or annie about Apple. They don't pay my bills. I don't care about Bodega. I like yelling at stupid stuff because it gives me a release. I'm not really this angry, upset. But, I mean, when it comes to my Social Security number and the fact that, like Mark said, you don't give that out, Here's the coolest thing about that. Now, this inept, handicapped, special needs company is going to try to sell you on protecting your identity. Oh, come check us out and find out if we broke your stuff, which we already did. But here, give us $10 a month and we're going to monitor to make sure that nobody illegally uses your information to do something harmful to you. Like, they're trying to sell stuff to people and they haven't even admitted everything that they've done wrong. This is the world we live in. Like I said, oh, the humanity. I laugh in my heart because, you know, it's so serious, but we can't even do anything about it. It doesn't even matter. The fact that you're talking about better security, when you have that level of information, there's not really much security you could do. Because with that, I can do anything. I mean, anything if you're smart. So I'm just going to sit here and hope that my credit score stays like a 640. I ain't got good credit, so I'm not super worried about it. I mean, I got to pay cash for everything I want anyway. But that's neither here nor there. Don't judge me. other people out here have to worry about their credit score. I'm thinking to myself, shoot, I had a roommate. He's got great credit. I still know his social. I might as well just sneak in there and blame it on Equifax and go get me a new ride next week. It's embarrassing. It's insane. It is absolutely insane that we just sit here like, oh, wow. Admin. I have to laugh at it. And how sad is that? These companies should all take notice. Every single major institution in the world should be like, oh, we should change it from 123, right? Like, really? Okay, everybody. Okay. Let's hire somebody. Do something. Call a cousin or a nephew and ask them how to, like, shore up your internet. I don't know what to say anymore.
Here's my big fear. The nuclear code is password.
No, password admin. That's how that works. Now, there is one good thing from this. If you've been watching the trend meters for Google and Facebook, because there are actually sites where you can see what are the queries, about mid-week last week, you started to see much more of a trend of asking, what is a credit bureau? What is a CRC? Yeah. And people are actually starting to realize, these companies have all this information about me. I had no idea.
Yeah.
And they honestly did not connect their credit score with these companies that are maintaining vast amounts of information on their credit activity. That's actually a good thing. That can spark a good conversation of, wait a minute, how do we decide who we entrust our data with? I mean, your point mm-hmm. taken. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. we ultimately have to move to a society where this information can be in the open and I can still be secured. That's ultimately the goal. But it never hurts to have people start looking at who actually has access to their information. That could be one good thing that comes out of this. Now, Elizabeth Warren has already submitted legislation. She's trying to get support for it right now that would essentially make Equifax responsible for everyone that they victimized for the rest of their lives. I have no idea how whether or not that's going to go through. And then
let me correct myself. My credit score was an 820.
Whoa.
And now all of a sudden this is 640. I was looking at that on record in case the bill goes through. Let me get a check. Go ahead, finish what you're saying. My apologies.
We've had our first instance of fraud here live on Twitter.
come on, man. We can edit out the first one. How you gonna call me out for fraud?
No, but I mean, honestly, if you could have an honest conversation with the average person, let's talk about that average person again who buys an iPhone because they like the style, and get them to realize all the different places that are making money off of their information, do you then make a more informed populace? Or is this one of these things that's in one ear, out the other? People don't care.
I think it's look what happened in the EU where cookies are evil. Yeah. Cookies are tracking right. You. Cookies are awful. So on every single site out of Europe, that's okay for you. Cookies. Okay. Cookies. Okay. Yeah, okay. Cookies. Right. And now we have the GDPR, the privacy regulations coming in May 2018 in Europe. And I think it was Dana Boyd who taught me long ago. You don't want to regulate knowledge. You want to regulate the use of the knowledge. Right, the fact that somebody has this name and was born this date and their mother was named that, that's just knowledge. What you can do with it is the issue. The fact that I have prematurely gray hair and you choose not to hire me because of it, I can't make you not know, unless I'm in Men in Black, that you haven't seen me and you don't know how old I am. But if you don't hire old farts like me 10 times in a row, the use of that knowledge is wrong. We've got to change the whole paradigm here around this, and I don't hear that discussion happening. I really don't. Right. It will all be Bitcoin. Bitcoin is going to solve it all. Now, Apple and Bitcoin will solve it all, right, Owen?
A quick question to the panel. Have you all set your fraud alerts already?
I am not. What do I need to do?
Okay.
What did I tell you? People spend $41 a month on an iPhone plan and don't have life insurance. We don't care. I started the show telling you, this is America. We're not worried about that, okay? I'm sitting here watching a football game. I'm half paying attention to y'all right now. And you think we done set fraud alerts?
Who's winning?
I'm from the hood, B. I'm worried about the fraud down the street with them trying to sell me a car from Leroy, not Equifax hack. I'm just saying.
Let's do a quick public service announcement here. Right now, if you don't have a fraud alert, before the show actually ends, you could go to fraud.transunion.com. You have to enter in some personally identified information. But it's not Equifax. It's not Equifax. So it's a different – it's one of the other big three CRCs, credit reporting companies. Once you report it to one – they report it to the others. Yeah. So you just have to do it once. You can do it entirely online. And the nice thing about this, it will give you a reminder when it's about to expire. So once it expires, you just renew it. So it's good for 90 days. Now, if you actually detect action in your credit report, someone has tried to use your ID, you can get a fraud alert that lasts for 7 years. And again, that's free, and you just do it once. But there is a difference here between a credit alert, a fraud alert, which is what we're talking about right now, and what Leo is advocating, which is a credit freeze.
Which I've had to do.
Which you've had to do. If you've got a credit freeze, you don't need a fraud alert. The difference is when you do a fraud alert, companies can still get your credit report, but they get a bit of information saying this identity may be compromised. Here's a number you should call, which will put you in touch with the actual person so you can verify whether or not this is them. In a credit freeze... They can't even see that. They see nothing until you whitelist them.
Right. Because what was happening to me, I don't know if I say this out loud, but people were, to harass me, they were just getting credit cards in my name.
Yep.
Right? And so the credit freeze means now they can't do that.
Yes.
And it's a pain, but I'm old and I already have my house and I'm not going to be getting any credit unless it's to get the plot.
But you should know, people should know that if you do put a credit freeze, it will affect you in things other than applying for loans or credit cards.
Like what?
If you apply for a new job, one of the first things they'll do is they'll check your credit history, because that will determine whether or not you're a trustworthy employee. When you go to buy a new phone, they will check your credit history. So you have to whitelist that. You will find yourselves in a lot of situations where you have to take the extra step to jump into the app, give your PIN, and make sure that, okay, I'm going to whitelist
PIN. I forget the PIN.
Yeah.
Where's the PIN?
Forget that. Owen, you seem unimpressed.
Like I said, you lost me at go give somebody else some more information to confirm that I am who I am. And then I got to wait for them to call me back on the callback with the callback. And now all of a sudden I can't get a new iPhone X because my credit just dropped 32 points because I done checked it 14 times. I had to wait for the call to get back. So, yes, no, I'm not alerting my fraud. I'm going to roll with these punches and see how it happens and worry about it at the other end.
Well, you can do the fraud alert. It's not a freeze. And remember, it's free, totally free. Completely free.
Yeah, but what do I got to do to get that again? What's the first thing I got to do? Okay.
How about this? You can use my information, and then you could put a fraud alert on my account, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. Never know.
That doesn't work. You have to trust somebody, right? If you don't trust somebody.
You know who I trust? The same person you trust.
Leo.
The Lord. Jeff. Savior.
Oh, yeah. No. He's got a phenomenal credit score.
There you go. You got a friend in me. That's who you trust, brother. That's who you trust.
Oh, gentlemen, this has been a lot of fun. I think we have to start calling it an end here. Was there any story that's in the doc? We had a lot there that you really wanted to talk about that we didn't cover. I just want to make sure everyone's happy here.
You had all mine.
Yeah. I'm happy.
You're happy, Owen?
We're good. I got what I want. I'm always happy. I'm the happiest person on this panel.
Yes. I will admit that. Thank you all for making this so enjoyable. I didn't know I was going to be doing this till a couple of hours ago, but I love doing TWiT. It is one of my favorite shows just because I get to talk tech. I get to talk geek. Let's go around the table and make sure everyone knows what you're doing, where they can find you. Mark, if people wanted to find out more about your work, more about what your publication has done to expose things like incompetence at Equifax, where can they go?
They can go to Bloomberg.com/tech for all of our tech coverage from around the world. And I am at Mark Millian on Twitter.
Mark Millian, he is one of the chillest people I know in tech. Honestly, nothing phases you. I've never seen you angry.
Keeping it chill.
Yeah. Is there a story we could cover that might make you, you know, go off on a rant like Owen?
I don't think I could ever match Owen.
I don't think anyone could potentially match Owen. Oh, Doctor, where can they find you when you're not hiding in the black background of Solace?
First of all, I love Jeff. I do a podcast. Jeff, I got to get you on my podcast. Mark, I get you on a podcast. Padre, we got to reschedule because we were supposed to do that. Secondly, Mark is like my inner being. If we couldn't both be the same, I'm not trying to have us be twins on the show. So I'm Mark's spirit animal. He's my spirit animal. We just switch up for the show. That's really how it's going down.
I feel you, man.
IQMZ.com is where you can find all my stuff. At Odoctor on everything else. If not, it's fraud because I'm Odoctor on everything. But what I really wanted to show you guys was I got a TWiT fan that gave me this shirt. And it says, sorry.
Oh, no.
You know... Do you have any idea how black you were driving? And it's from Urban Profilers. One of the TWiT Nationers sent it to me. So I wanted to give him a shout out because I thought that was a funny shirt because I get pulled over all the time. But great show. Loved the show. I loved ranting and yelling and stuff. And Jeff.
We love you, Remy.
You were more on my team than usual. I'm glad. We're all getting the iPhone X, the Pixel X.
I want the notch. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, I don't know. I hope Google does something with that. But that's all I want to say. I love you guys. Had a great show. It was fun. Love the chat room, too. The chat room is the best. They're smarter than all of us. We only had time to read half of the information that they're pouring into us, you know, that's where I get all my good tidbits. That's why I sound like I know what I'm doing.
Owen, J.J. Stone, again, Odoctor, always a pleasure. And speaking of pleasures, again, the fact that I get to work with you officially for the first time. We saw each other at the Christmas party in the Brick House. But, of course, they're going to find you in New York. They're going to find you writing wonderful stories.
Buzzmachine.com is a blog. Medium at Jeff Jarvis. Twitter at Jeff Jarvis. But if you read that, you know too much.
You know, there's still a story that goes around the studio anytime we talk about standards and how they're different from country to country. I was watching live when you had your BBC appearance, and you said crap.
Yes.
And evidently, that's horrible.
I got in kicked the UK. Off the BBC.
It's terrible.
I had no idea.
No one had any idea.
Because I was going to say the S word, and I thought I was going safe by using the crap word.
I think you actually would have been safe using the S word.
I think I could have. Yeah.
Just to say shite.
Yeah. See, Ian Thompson has taught me to just say bollocks. or dog's bollocks. I can't wait. One of those is good. Bollocks is bad and dog's bollocks is good. I don't understand how that works, but that's it. Yeah.
I'm not going there.
No, not at all. Folks, don't forget that we do Twit every Sunday starting at 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. You can watch us live at live.twit.tv. As long as you're watching live, why not jump into our chat room at irc.twit.tv? There you'll be able to converse with the Twit Army as well as give information to the host. We've got you right there. There's a small screen right below the cameras so we can read your comments. We can see your thinking. We can incorporate you into the show here at Twit TV. Also, don't forget that you can find us at our show page at twit.tv/twit. I know it's a little bit redundant, but it's also easy to remember. If you go there, you can find all of our back episodes, all of the links to the stories that we talked about, so you can make your own analysis. This is ultimately what we want here at Twit TV. We want you to take the knowledge we give you and make up your own mind. Also, don't forget that you can subscribe on that page. You can get an audio version, a video version, or a high-definition video version into your device of choice automatically. Just go to twit.tv/subscribe. Finally, thanks to everyone who makes this show possible, to Lisa and Leo, who have kept this show on the air for all these years, to our engineers, John Slanina, who made sure that all of our cables were hooked up to the right thing, and to Karsten, the super producer, who books our guests, who pushes the buttons and makes sure everything is good to go.
Hey, bonus note. You know what the last thing is?
What?
Another Twit is in the can.
What?
Doing the Twit.